This podcast is brought to you by Shout Engine. In less than 5 minutes, you can start your own podcast for free with ShoutEngine.com.
Fucking roll it.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Speeding. Time speeding. Sip your beers. There's still light out, but it's a summertime light, meaning lighter later in the day, so we can sip beers on this one.
Yeah, I mean, technically, you could sip beers at like 4:30, because in the winter, that's when it gets dark.
You can, but usually if we go like 1 o'clock, no beers, you know. It's after
gym. Gotta keep
gym.
It professional.
Austin Cabot in the his house, Smoking Tire Podcast. What's up, sir?
What's Cheers. Going on? Cheers. Good to Cheers. See you guys again.
Chris is doing a thing, so Spin. He ain't home.
Haven't seen him in a while.
Well, he moved to San Pedro.
Yeah, he's not in the hood anymore.
Right, well, you know what's crazy? He moved further away, but it actually takes him less time to get here now because Redondo Beach is nowhere near a freeway in San
LA is so weird.
Start off with that inside baseball. Yeah, at LA, talking about that LA traffic. You just experienced a whole bunch.
I did, and being on the motorcycle was amazing.
Yo, you did. You did Laguna Seca to the studio today.
Yeah, I woke up. In the campground at Laguna Seca today. I did take a shower for your convenience.
Oh, you not only went to you camped. At Laguna
I camped
Seca.
For 4 nights at Laguna.
Out of a motorcycle, camping 4 nights. Are there showers at Laguna Seca?
Yeah, with hot water. Surprisingly,
really.
But it's one of those like ones where you just touch the button. And the water comes out, it's super annoying.
So it's like that I ain't wasting a drop thing. Like
exactly.
If you're not standing here with a hand on the button.
It's a California-style public shower.
It's like a beach shower.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
But with hot water.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was kind of nice.
For Time Attack or something?
A Speed Ventures event.
Oh. So Austin runs Speed Ventures events.
Yeah, I'm the event director for Speed Ventures as of just a couple months ago.
And track director for Grid Life. And are you still instructor at PEC?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Okay. Well, not really. Maybe not.
They tolerate me down there from time to time.
So he does racing. Professional, recreational racing.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm like
professional
the
racing event organizer of some kind.
That's probably the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Like the Bernie of track days.
Right, but
maybe.
Better looking and with less money.
Much less money.
I like behind the curtain of of driving instructor, and it's like, ooh, how much money do those guys make? It's like enough to sleep on a mat. Right?
Enough to
in
camp
the dirt.
At Laguna Seca for 4 days.
There's
it's
so
not a bad
many.
Life, though. It's not bad if you're about it.
And you meet great people.
Yeah.
But I've actually, I don't drive as much anymore, but I really enjoy helping people get into the sport and kind of experience it and have growth.
But do you ride right seat, though?
Not as much anymore.
Right, fuck right, Steve.
No, so for Grid Life, I run all of the instructor stuff, so I'm in charge of assigning the instructors. Me and my buddy Mike Cohn assign all of the instructors to students for Grid Life. And
yeah, so they do. Is it? I didn't.
So you're the general, and you send people
pretty
off
much.
Pretty
much.
War.
Is it? Because I mean, I've never got instructor Grid Life, but I hear them call for them. Is it like instructors get free track time in exchange for instructing? Is that pretty much how it works?
Mostly free track time.
Discounted,
there is still a fee to make sure that they don't like flake.
Yeah,
they pay a little bit. So
oh yeah, just enough so they show up.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I understand. That makes sense. Instructors, they can be fucking flaky.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and if their car's like not working probably, you still want them to like show up and do
so
their
we,
job.
So we have, unfortunately, we've had some people that we've had to tell that we would prefer that they not come back and instruct with us.
Because they didn't do a good job?
Yeah, you know, if your car breaks and you're there instructing, your job for the weekend is essentially instructing.
Oh,
it's
not
to fix your car.
Right, right, right.
You know,
well,
you
can
your
do
car
both.
On your own time,
but yeah.
But you better be there for your student every time.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Because I remember my first track day. And I had an amazing instructor, but I know some people that haven't.
Yeah, no.
And a lot of those people, they choose not to go back to the track as often because, you know, you're a representative of the sport, essentially, as an instructor. It's that mm-hmm. person's first time on track.
Yeah, that could make or break. I don't remember ever really having a terrible instructor. I've been pretty lucky, I think. I've always had, I think, I can't really recall ever having bad instructors, but I hear about bad instructor experiences a lot, and like you if you have an instructor that's like way too intense and like screamy or like freaking out or whatever. But I think god there's got to be There's got to be more worse students than bad instructors.
Yeah, for the most part.
I hear like some real nightmare stories from instructors about students, and that's got to be fucking scary shit, dude. So, imagine being right seat with someone who doesn't listen.
To be a student, all you have to do is own a car. To be an instructor, you at least need to like climb some sort of ladder.
Yeah.
So you can have way more horror stories on the inside.
Yeah, and actually now, more recently, the Motorsport Safety Foundation has introduced like a program that I've still been kind of studying a little bit, but they have like a validation program for instructors now that
that's like a new thing, isn't it?
Yeah, just a couple months ago.
It's actually been shocking in the past when I realized that there's no actual real qualification to be an instructor. I mean, in general, it's like the organizer of the event has to know you're a good driver. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's really it. There's no, like, school necessarily or, like, certification program.
You have to be a good communicator, too. I know a lot of people that are great drivers.
Right.
And they just, they can't instruct. You know, they can talk about you know, in the paddock, but you put them in a car with somebody and they don't quite know what to, you know, what to say and how to guide somebody.
I went to a college that really prided themselves on having the smartest people there, like, teaching, but they were, and often they were, like, super advanced in their field, but they were shit teachers. You know, I had a physics teacher freshman year of college that literally worked at that fucking, particle collider thing in Germany.
Oh, CERN.
And he would fly back and forth to Germany.
Really?
So, like, my class was on, like, a Tuesday, and he had another class on a Wednesday, and he would fly to Philly for 2 days and then fuck off back to Germany. And so if you had a question about, like, physics, anything, like, this dude was not around. Huh. Imagine that, but at 100 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour, when you need to be on the quickness with your instructor.
It takes a special type of person to instruct. It really does. You have to be a little bit crazy.
Fucking nerves of steel, but also crazy.
Yeah.
I don't envy those people, dude.
So I, you know, for a while I got into it. I was instructing probably 40 days a year in like 2012 and 2013. And I was spending like 50 plus days at the track. So I would compete certain weekends, but most of the time it was just HPDE weekends and I was instructing. And I found that through instructing, I actually became a better driver. You know, because you're essentially getting seat time from the passenger seat, but and you can almost use your like student as a guinea pig a little bit.
That's true, actually.
Like, you know,
you're regurgitating theory over and over again, and then it just sticks in your brain.
So it's you know, it's kind of fun. It really is. But I have had some experiences that wow, this sounds like a I don't know, sexual something. Like,
tell me where the student touched you.
I've had some bad experiences.
Show us on the helmet.
Yeah. But
yeah, no. I think most people want to be better and try and listen to experts. But there's definitely, you know, track days bring out egos in some people.
Yeah.
And you can't always tell because you don't judge. But like, some people, like, you can usually tell by how their seat is set up. If they're in a super gangster lean, they kind of, like, you know, are really comfortable with, like, poor positioning.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a bad sign.
Yeah.
There's a few giveaways. Russians without sleeves. Like, I'd worry about that. There was a guy at GridLife in the beginner group.
Was he in an Evo or an STI, first and foremost?
No, that's probably a bad sign, too.
There's a lot of Polish dudes from Chicago that bring out Evos and STIs. I love them to death.
The guy in the 1,000-horsepower GTR, who was fine.
I
talked to his instructor afterwards. But can you imagine being the instructor going out in the beginner group in a 1,000-horsepower GTR? I mean, it's got to be fucking terrifying.
What's even more terrifying sometimes, I've worked for some of the like exotic car rental places as an instructor.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that have like Exotics Racing where they have the brake are great. But the ones that I've worked for in the past have not had that.
Yeah.
And it's fun because people get to drive cars and you essentially like make their day.
You know?
They're driving a supercar on a track, and they've never done either one before.
Right.
You know, they're just coming out of, like, playing Gran Turismo and stuff, but that can also be dangerous.
That's bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the Nürburgring, when we went to the Nürburgring, to RSR Nürburgring, which is the place that rents race cars, you know, the first thing they say is, you know, have you driven this in Forza, you know, before?
Get out.
And then, they won't rent you a fucking car.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they won't let you go out without an instructor
if
you say yes to that. Yeah, for real.
So they deem it as more dangerous.
Significantly more dangerous.
Because you got this. That's why.
No, they won't, they won't let you out without an instructor. They'll if you can make it through one lap, you know, with an instructor, then they'll let you go out on your own.
Huh.
But they will not let you out if you say that you play in Forza or Gran Turismo. Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
Apparently, the odds are much higher of stuffing a car.
So, pro tip, always say no. I have not.
Always say no.
I'm not saying, but I'm saying.
Also, drive it like you haven't played the game, because it's much weirder in person.
Yeah.
It's like tighter, and there's more little bumps going on, and there's more traffic. And
you just
got to
drive it like a road where you're not going to get arrested, and then you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, that's a thing.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been. I want to go sometime. What car would you recommend?
Dude, the Polos honestly, nothing fast.
Like a Swift?
900 horsepower GT.
Yeah, honestly, for your first time, nothing fast.
Yeah.
The Swifts they have, those Suzuki Swifts, JF took one of them out, had a great time. They have a couple of 86s
that are really
good fun. I got to do it for my first time in like this German tuner Volvo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which was a Volvo V40. The little hatchback.
Yeah,
they don't have them over here.
I thought the V40 was a wagon here.
It's a wagon there too, but it's like a hatchback wagon, like a 5-door.
Okay,
like Focus ST size, give or take. But it had a drivetrain swap from a cross country,
so it had
a 2.5-liter five cylinder turbo with all wheel drive, which that car does not come with over there, So it was kind of fast, but like...
That'd be a fun car.
It was like just on the line. Like, I wouldn't have wanted any more.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So your first time, you don't want something fast, for sure.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of memorization and stuff like that. And in a slow car, you really can drive just what you see, you know? And you can go flat in places where you're like, yeah, this is fine. And where, you know, you could end up going 180, 190 miles an hour in a really fast car
I see a lot of guys that are well-to-do that start off in really fast cars doing track days.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they'll do a couple, like, track days on their GT3 or, you know, their Ferrari or something. And all of a sudden, they show up with, like, an S2000 or an E46 M3 or, like, a Miata or something.
I completely understand that. I enjoy racetracks as much as anybody, but, you know, we had that M3 at GridLife. Like, that's a fast motherfucker, that car. Mm-hmm. You know, of all the cars that I drove... for the one takes and stuff that weekend, the brand new M3 I brought was the fastest one.
Yeah.
That was the fastest. I drove a Time Attack car, and like the M3, if you put the tires that were on the Time Attack car on that brand new M3, it would have been just as fast as the full on Time Attack car.
Yeah. I would like to point out you almost beat Von Gittin Jr. in a press car.
I know. I know. I haven't brought that up on the show. I think it was the car. Vaughn's an amazing driver.
Yeah.
But I was 1/10 off him in Time Attack, but he embarrassed me in drifting, as you do. You know, I put on, wait till you guys see the video. I put on the sorriest drifting display. I'm going to run it. I could throw this video away, and most people would not think less of me for throwing the video away, because I put on a fucking sorry bit of driving in that drift session. But that was the most intimidating drifting I've ever had to do.
You didn't run the F80 in...
I didn't run it in drift.
Because I know last year, it was like a crowd favorite with the M2.
With the M2, Last year was, for some reason, it was different. I don't know why I didn't... I think it was because they were running full lap.
Okay.
Last year, they had really, like, the way they did the staging and stuff, they had, like... They just changed the format slightly to where it really felt like people were running these full drift laps, and they weren't. There was a lot more drift cars this year, and the cars were there were a lot more pro cars, whereas last year it was more like kind of amateur-y, and I didn't feel quite as comfortable this year in doing drift in it. I mean, I thought I was going to get yelled at for sure, because I definitely did some drifting during the advanced instructor session. And I was like, how are they not black flagging me? I was like, if I was them, I'd black flag me. But
I got to drive a similar car that weekend.
What? And... Which car?
No, the same car.
Oh, the same? No, you don't have to pretend that you didn't drive it. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know what was allowed.
No, dude, it went back shiny as I got it. No one cares now.
Yeah.
No, if you stuffed the thing, it would be different. But how fucking lovely is that car?
Zach was in the car with me because I was kind of showing him the line. and started sliding in the car a little bit, and I was like, I wonder if we're going to get black flag for that one. I think I told you that.
It's pretty big slide. Yeah. But it was, you know, it was clean. It was clean. We came in behind the guy in that ProDrive 2.5 RS.
Oh, yeah.
And he walked up.
Oh,
in
the, you mean in the, in the rally car?
In the rally car.
Yeah, dude had a fucking old WRC car. He said he bought that for 15 on Craigslist?
Yeah, it was a ProDrive car that was built and never run. It was like their spare.
Oh, crazy.
Hold on, great what a car, deal right? he got.
Yeah. He's running on gravel tires, and it was sliding all over the place.
Yeah, it was slow as dog shit, but it was great to watch it run.
He was so proud of the anti-lag. He's like, I don't care, I've got anti.
Yeah,
but he said he watched you in the rearview mirror just come into view, just sliding side. He was like, who's driving that blue M3 right now?
But how nice is that car?
That car was great.
The power oversteer
everywhere, as long as you take it out of M Sport mode. We put it in M Sport mode.
You have to go full
first.
Off.
Yeah, full off is the way to drive. We put it in M Sport mode first and went out, just did like an out and in, and I was like, we can't
just
drive.
The trail braking, it lifts just enough for you to roll into
and put the suspension in like comfort mode.
And you
can, you know, you can make it compress and lighten the rear a little bit more, and the wheelbase is so long.
Super good.
It was just very, very easy to drive.
I don't even know if I said it, but right before that in North Carolina, I had the ZL1 1LE. You know, which is a monster, which they just released. I ran the Nürburgring at 716, which is, you know, a big
716?
That's a big number.
Jesus.
And we were hanging out with the guy who drove it, too. I don't remember his name.
I wasn't there.
The short dude. You weren't there.
Like the GM engineer.
GM powertrain engineer. Yeah. These guys can fucking wheel, dude. Yeah. And he made a big point of being like, auto rev match off, traction fully off, stability off. He made a really big point and be like, yeah, I don't use any of that bullshit. He's like, they make me put that shit on there. He's like, I turn it all off. So he ran that lap. That dude can fucking wheel.
Damn.
And, but honestly, I didn't love the car. Like, it was a fucking race car. It was amazing, but I didn't make a connection with it. You know what I mean? It felt big. You couldn't see out of it. It wasn't very comfortable. Got to Detroit, got in the M3, and was just like, this is money, and obviously not nearly as fast, but so much more, you know, balanced when it came to moving it around and being more playful and stuff like that. Fucking great car.
Yeah.
Great car.
How much, because you've driven a ton of stuff on track, how much does visibility matter? Like, you're only looking forward, really. Like, you're obviously checking your rearview if you're doing wheel-to-wheel, but if you got a Camaro versus the M3, which has good visibility, versus, you know, an S2000, which has a much more sloped hood.
As long as you know the track, it isn't as important if you're just clicking off laps.
Yeah.
It's important when you start getting into, like, open passing groups, when you need to really watch your mirrors and things like that. And I guess really important...
In a race, it's really important.
Yeah,
when I'm
really
racing,
important.
Like, an AER, like, I'm in my mirrors constantly, especially in, like, a not-so-fast car.
Yeah.
There's five classes, you know, and I could have a fucking vet at the end of the back straight of Road Atlanta with a 65-mile-an-hour differential. Like, I want to be able to see that motherfucker, you know. But I would say with the Camaro, it's not the visibility, the side, and it's just by yourself on a track, it's not that big a deal. But it's hard to place the front tires. I mean, maybe if I had, you know, a year with the car or even a week with the car, it would be different. But I would say the M3 was easier with a lower hood and a bigger windshield and a bigger greenhouse. It just felt like easier to place the front tires. That's kind of what I got out of that. I'm not trying to shit on the Camaro. People go, you fucking hate the Camaro. Like, you don't understand. This thing was a missile.
Yeah.
I mean, this car runs like mid-low 11s with a stick, you know what I mean, and pulls like 1.2G, and it's spool valves like crazy as shit, you know, but it doesn't have that roundedness that the M3
it's like too focused.
It's a race car.
Yeah.
It's a race car. It's compromised as a road car because it's a race car, whereas the M3 kind of does everything.
That's like the track version of the Demon.
Yeah. 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 I wonder if you could make a Demon go around corners.
Ooh.
You can make anything do anything with enough money.
Very good point.
That's true. But I don't know. There's certain things about it that are very drag racing focused. I'm not sure if you could...
I wonder what the front suspension
is like. Yeah, like, is this suspension geometry, like, wonky for drag racing, or could you make it...
I think I read if you push a setting or something, it squats more in the rear.
Yeah.
So it shoves it down so you can go forward more. So I think it is set up. But you probably swap some springs and shocks, like you said, if you have money.
Yeah.
Are those chassis still based off of the Mercedes chassis that, like, the
That's
300
a bit
was
of a misnomer. It's not the entire chassis. It's basically the rear suspension architecture.
Okay.
The rest of it is like kinda, but not like the floor pan and the rear suspension architecture is really it.
I know it was a pretty big deal. I used to work for a tire company that provided the OE tires for the Mercedes version. Mm-hmm. And then when they started building the Chrysler, they used the same tire.
Yeah.
But the car was so much heavier.
Were they just going through tires quickly?
Created tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. They go through tires now because they have little skinny tires and fucking 700 horsepower. Yeah. You know, that's why they go through tires. But I've never had enough. Have you ever had enough miles on a Hellcat to really be concerned with tires? I haven't.
No.
I've never.
Musso and Thad did that huge road trip. I mean, I think the tires go away only as quick as you make them.
Yeah.
So
it's real easy to blast through a set of rears in a Hellcat.
I can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
It's real easy. And it's real easy to do it in a CTSV as well. And, I mean, you know, a lot of those cars.
Speaking from experience?
Yeah.
Yeah.
15, 20 minutes is about all I got.
When it's that accessible, like when really just rolling the throttle a little harder goes into a rolling burnout, but the car is super long and heavy, you just want to do it all over the place.
Yeah.
It's so easy.
I will say, to be perfectly balanced, and as well give credit where it is due, the ZL1 has a unique tire compound.
Okay.
And I think it's a Goodyear. I'm pretty sure it's a Goodyear. And it was fucking great. It was sketchy in the wet, but...
As any good race tire is
sketchy in the wet. But in the dry, it was really progressive and really communicative, and we did a lot of sliding in the car, and we didn't completely destroy them. They held up pretty good. Not just me. Lee Keen also was getting sideways with it. And when it broke away, it didn't like just vanish. It broke really nice and progressive. Yeah, it was good.
Huh.
And so it's the first Goodyear I've liked in years. I'm not a particularly fan of Goodyear tires, performance tires anyway, but these were excellent. And so they did a really good job with those with those tires.
What Goodyear performance tires are really out there?
The F1 asymmetric, which stinks. Yeah. That's what they use
Goodyear
on
Goodyear does on Dunlop
Corvettes.
Though. So any like the Dereza Star Specs.
Oh, okay.
And stuff.
Well, Dunlop, Dereza Star Specs is what we use in the AER car, and those are great for a lightweight car. We did fucking two races on a set.
On one set?
Yeah, we rotated front to back. We run square stance, but we rotated across the corners.
Okay, X's.
Yeah, X's. And they lasted two races. Shocking.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, two full races or like 2 days of racing, each day is a race?
Two 9-hour races, okay. One on a Saturday and one on a... No, not two race weekends.
Okay.
Two
so
races.
One weekend.
Got it. Yeah.
Okay.
That's still pretty good for a 9-hour racing. That's pretty solid.
What do you not like about the Goodyear F1 A-Spec?
They had no grip.
Oh, yeah.
They just weren't good. I had them on my vet. Mm-hmm. Hated them.
I remember that.
I drove them at one of these tire launch events where they had competitive tires. And they have like same car on like four different tires, two different ones. And I drove on them. And I didn't like them at all. So I mean, I guess they could have been fucking sandbagging some shit, or who knows? But I don't think they do that. I think at those tires, you know, they go to these events and they got money, you know, so they're going to choose the A tire, which is their tire, and then probably the four worst competitors. They're not going to choose the four closest competitors.
Notice when you put the ZL1 on these Prius tires, it's not as good.
Yeah, they did it. I think it was the Michelin event, the PS4S event. They had them, and then there was a BFG, the Sport Comp 2 event that I went to. Those are good.
That's what was on the wagon. My wagon
good.
When you drove
those
it.
Those are good tires.
Yeah.
For the money, they were really good in the wet.
I was really surprised by those. And I got like 30,000 miles out of them, running like 2.5 degrees of camber on the front.
Yeah,
of the
makes sense.
Yeah, so
I'm not going to get that many out of the Super Sports in my Focus. That's okay. That's okay. What else we got? So you were in Laguna. You motorcycled up there on a fucking speed triple. Is that what you ride?
Yeah.
Street triple. Oh, street triple?
Yeah,
so that's just a slightly more upright one?
Yeah, 675. No fairing.
That's windy. That's a lot of...
I'm training,
though. You take the 5 the whole way?
No, I took the 101.
Okay, that's better.
But what sucked, I was riding in a mesh jacket, and out by the beach, it was too cold. And then it would be like... it was 107 when I'd get inland. It was tough going up.
That's hot.
Coming back, it wasn't as bad, but...
How would you be cooler than a mesh jacket? That's as cool as it gets, right?
Yeah. But it was actually kind of nice because when it was super, super cold, I would get like kind of frozen. And then you go over the mountains and then it's hot and you thaw out a little bit.
That's tough.
It's spaced out just enough so you don't die or die.
Yeah.
I guess the solution to that would be a fairing bike where it's like you could wear the mesh jacket, but it would sort of get some of the hot wind and then some of the cold wind off you. But there's no
perfect solution.
I'm
just a glutton for punishment. That was a training ride. I'm actually planning on riding that thing to Grid Life at Road Atlanta.
I don't know
from
why.
LA.
You said that before. I don't know why you want to do that.
I don't know. Because I'm
an idiot. Can't you get a press bike as a now you're kind of a member of the media? Why don't you get a proper bike and ride it on a proper bike? Like, why beat the shit out of yourself doing it on that bike?
I think I still want to do it on a naked bike. I don't know why.
Dude, there's no route there that's not 1,000 degrees.
Yeah,
and there's no route there that isn't perfectly straight either. That's like the 10. It's like a shit route.
So, go through Colorado.
Crazy. Well, it's the only time of the year that I have to actually be able to take that sort of trip because we don't have any Speed Ventures events like the 4 weeks after that event. So I have this nice long break afterwards.
Why don't you take my Lexus?
Take
the Lexus. Fuck that.
That's the only thing. Fuel. Fuel's expensive. I could take my ambulance. I could take my ambulance and have a place
really
to sleep.
Fuel.
You have to explain people what you just said.
Yeah, you bought an ambulance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forget that.
That's like a thing.
I forget we're not just sitting here like talking to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I bought a 97 Ford Econoline ambulance in the van body.
That's an ambulette, right? It's not a box van.
No.
It fits
inside all of the factory body. It just has the roof cut off and raised. So I'm incredibly short, and I wanted to buy a Sprinter van. So I could stand up in it and do a camper conversion, but surprise, surprise, Sprinter vans are kind of expensive.
They're expensive.
Yeah.
Especially the tall ones.
Yeah.
Our buddy Cameron Weiss, the Weiss Watch Company.
He was on the show a couple weeks ago.
He was on the show, watchmaker here in Southern California, has bought a Sprinter van and converted the interior of it, and it's pretty cool. Hand-built, you know, thing. So the ambulance is a normal van, but with a popped roof.
Yeah. So it's got a raised roof. It's like a 5'7 roof, and I'm 5'6, and so is my wife, so it's perfect. We can stand up in there. It's still built out as an ambulance right now with all the storage compartments and everything because I live, you know, in an apartment by the water and don't have anywhere to build anything.
Can you, like, partially remove it and leave some of the cabinets and, like,
make
a bed out of it? Or is the plan to gut it and start over?
I have porch furniture that, like, it was just... happenstance. My wife was like, get this furniture off of the porch. And it's these like wicker squares that have a pad on top of them. And there's two of them.
Fireproof.
And they fit perfectly in between the wall and the bench.
Okay.
So I have those in there.
But that chair's not a bed.
Well, there's two of them and we're short, remember?
So they're
not chairs. They're just square, like flat tops.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Like big ottomans?
Yeah.
And so that made a bed?
Pretty much. So what's nice about it, when you get to where you're going, you can pull them out and you have baller ass seating.
Is there
wherever you're at?
Does it hold water?
It could if I put a tank in it.
Is there a shore power or a Jenny?
There's an inverter in there.
Okay,
but it's not hooked up, so I gotta go through. The other thing that's annoying about
would that run off a Jenny or would that run off the just the
so there isn't
engine?
An actual like generator for it.
Right.
The thing has four batteries, though.
Oh, okay.
And the
motor charges those?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The crappy part about it is, though, that all the power to the whole unit, it has a relay in there somewhere that after 5 minutes of it being off, it'll time out and doesn't give any power. That way, the ambulance can always start.
Right.
You know, in case of an emergency.
So you just need a standalone starting battery.
Yeah.
And then you could do the rest of it.
Yeah. So, but it's been really cool. We took it to Morro Bay last weekend.
Uh-huh.
And camped in it for 2 nights up there. Had
that's
it out on the
cool.
beach. Yeah. So
does it have an ambulance livery on it?
Yeah.
It
so,
does.
Yeah, it's I bought it from a guy also named Austin that used it for Best in the Desert. He was a volunteer like paramedic.
Okay.
And would take it to all those races. So it says like off road rescue on
it's
it.
It's not a 4x, is it?
No.
Okay.
No, I want to convert it.
What
eventually.
Motor?
7.3. That's the reason I bought
it. Is that the V8?
The V8 7.3 liter
the
that will go
not that,
for
it's
miles
not that
10, and miles.
That piece
no.
of shit.
10. No, it's a diesel.
Oh, the train.
Oh, it's a diesel.
Yeah, turbo
oh, that's
diesel.
Good. Oh, yeah. That's good. Yeah.
So I had an
F-250
with that same motor, and it had like 360,000 miles on it when I sold it and was just fine. Adam Jabe, his dad has one that has like almost 700,000 miles
wow.
on it.
And wow.
It's never had.
Oh, wait. Didn't he bring that truck last year to Grid Life?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I remember seeing. He was like, yeah, it's got 700 on it. I was like, fuck off. Yeah. It was a beast. Yeah. It looked pretty good, too. It was not. It wasn't fucked or anything.
This is like the cream of the crop, though, because here in California, you don't have to do emissions on diesel vehicles if they're 97 model year and older. And this is a 97.
That's money.
So, yeah.
Dude, the more I see like these overlanding vehicles and Sprinter van things and all that stuff, like it's so attractive. And like with our All Cars Go to Heaven series, not having to like get the tent out and get all the things out, like just
oh,
roll
dude,
up
me
and keep
sleeping
going,
in the van, it was so much better than setting up a tent.
Yeah.
So much better.
I believe you.
Yeah. I totally understand the idea of like van camping.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes total sense.
You know, I really wanted what's called a sportsmobile.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, I
Everybody
really wanted
Who
one
doesn't
of those.
Want a fucking sportsmobile?
But,
they're like 100 G's, though.
Yeah, so I'm going to try and make the poverty version of it out of this ambulance.
You pretty much could. I feel
All
like
I really have to do is convert it to four-wheel drive, and we're there.
How hard
that
is
seems
that?
Expensive.
Like $8,000 to $10,000.
That's a lot of money. But does, yeah. But does it need to be four-wheel drive?
I don't know. I'm afraid to take it out anywhere because it might get stuck.
But, like, of all the things that a sportsmobile is, yeah. like, for if you're going to do the poverty version, for you, I'm talking about, the, yeah. for you specifically, four-wheel drive is probably the thing you don't need.
I should probably lower it.
Because you'd be, you're going to, like, you're going to highway road trip it. You're going to track events. Like, you're not yeah. going wheeling, really, are
well, the
you?
The plan would be to be able to live out of it and, like, in between events... be able to just drive it across the country back and forth and camp out, like, go
but
to
you're
Moab,
still,
go to wherever.
Yeah, but you're still talking about highway stuff. You're not yeah. talking... You don't need a 4x.
I want to take it back in the woods and stuff, or, like, out to the desert.
There will be a point you will go, I need four-wheel drive now. Yeah. And it'll be when you're shoving stuff under the rear tires because yeah. it rained. You
well,
know
the
what
problem
mean?
Is
no.
the thing is heavy. It weighs... It like it's like 8,100 pounds.
Yeah.
So nothing's gonna
drive,
get me out if I get stuck.
Rear drive is with the right tires will go yeah. really long. You put some snows on that, you're got 80%.
It's
mean,
got all terrain.
Dude,
on
I drove
right
across
now.
Utah in a mid-engine rear-wheel drive fucking Previa on whatever tires I bought it on.
Very like, true.
Like, ain't
valid
nothing
point,
stopping
valid
me.
Point.
It's just how little do you give a fuck? Yeah. That's all. You know,
the thing's, it's got Fox shocks on the front of it.
Oh really?
Nice. Yeah. So
is that
yeah.
ambulance spec?
It's sportsmobile conversion spec.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, sweet. There's a company called Agile Off-Road, I think, down
well,
in
San Diego.
Well,
there's got to be another company that helps with interior stuff that isn't sportsmobile money.
Yeah. Yeah, right? His name's Adam Jabe. So, yeah.
There's some awesome videos on YouTube of, like, DIY people that took F-350 vans or yeah. E-350 vans and converting them and putting in solar and bracing the sides and putting in sound insulation, like... A lot of people say that, you know, insulation is super important because it gets hot when it's hot.
Well, that's
cold
what
when it's cold,
that's
like,
what Cameron
that
Cameron basically oh, yeah. with his Sprinter, he put insulation in the whole thing, and he was like, it saves you so much, you know, heating and cooling mm-hmm. energy by doing. He's like, and it was he put these like removable insulation panels. So, like, they cover the windows. You could take them down if you want, whatever. It was pretty yeah. cool. But I've seen at AER, I saw two ambulance conversions that were like motorhome / tow vehicles because yeah. I guess they can tow
yeah.
A reasonable amount. And at One Lap, this dude Brian Humphreys, I don't know if you met him.
Sounds familiar.
He's like he does like media and video for One Lap of America.
Okay,
and he turned an ambulance into a fucking edit bay.
Nice.
And it looks like he put like those mounted desk chairs like that are mounted on the floor, and there's three edit stations. Like it looks like a sports casting truck.
Whoa.
It was bitching. He must have spent a lot of money on this, but it looked cool as hell. I was about it.
Adam and I are planning on turning mine into a mobile podcasting studio, so we're gonna get some mounts.
Fucking
like
be
this
careful with that
on the roof.
My friend Eddie Ift, comedian,
mm-hmm.
Bought a school bus. For like $8,000. I was like, I'm going to do a mobile podcasting studio. And when I tell you he spent $60,000 turning this fucking thing into a podcast
By
studio.
Mobile podcast studio, I mean these
yeah.
to put my mics on. And yeah. then I'll just use my Zoom H6 recorder. That's
you don't
I
even
need
these. You can just handheld them. Or you we got that thing, which we tested last week. You might notice that the podcast this week sounds better. That's the sportscaster with the headphones and the thing. It doesn't actually. We wanted to convert this studio to those. With if you have four people on these mics and then just me on that one, it sounds like I'm on a cell phone. But if you have everybody on those and then you adjust for it, it sounds fine.
I've never thought the audio quality of the show sounds bad.
It's not that it's bad. It's that like we're at a point now where like. It probably could be a little better. And what we really do need to do is not so much, like, we just need to do better quality microphones. Like, these are $40. We could do $200 microphones, and that would be better. And also hang a big heavy curtain here to make this room smaller. According to my engineer friend, Stacy, you can,
yeah,
he
you're
can
losing
hear
the
rest the of
space.
This room.
Yeah.
But because I'm building a new studio, I'm very reluctant to spend money on this one.
Yeah.
For a free show. But I'm stoked about the ambulance. That's a cool plan.
Yeah.
I mean,
and my motorcycle fits inside, only one at a time though, unfortunately. Not both.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then you can tow stuff with it.
Yeah.
So
what is the tow rating on it? Can you tow a car?
I did. I've towed a car.
You
I
have.
I towed an SL500, the one that was on Bring a Trailer. I think I texted you the photo with a U-Haul trailer.
Yeah, you know, in hindsight, I probably should have bought that one.
It ended up going up to Chicago.
At the time, there was this SL500, same year as mine, that had a Kleeman supercharger on it, a Roots blower, which is a really high-end bit of kit. The blower It's like a $15,000 blower. Yeah. I mean, it was a super overpriced blower. And it brought the 500 from 300 to like 440 horsepower. Did you drive that thing?
I did, but not in anger. I loaded it on the trailer.
You don't want to drive it in anger, but did you drive it? Did you put your foot in it at all?
Just down the street. Yeah.
Did it feel fast?
It was pretty quick.
Did it run good?
Yeah, it ran really well. Fired right up. It had been sitting in the showroom and like everything was cold. It just fired right up.
How was the interior and stuff? Was it good?
It was almost immaculate.
How many miles were on that thing?
I think like, I don't even know. I think in like the 60s.
Okay. So it sold on Bring a Trailer for, I think, 18
yeah.
grand.
It seemed like a really good deal for what
it was. It was a good deal.
It takes
somebody
a very like particular buyer for that.
Yeah,
car.
I didn't love the wheels, and it seemed like it was lowered a little too far.
Yeah. And it had like side skirts on it. It had the body kit. I don't know what body kit was on
it. Like an AMG body kit on it. It wasn't great, but it was a nice. It wasn't my taste, I should say. But the supercharger alone. Like was worth it almost, but I looked at it a couple and I was like, and I ended up obviously not. Yeah. But it was a lovely car. I'm sure the guy who bought it was happy.
Yeah, I got sent to pick it up for Greenwood Motorsports and Wagons.
Yeah,
GMS Wagons in Chicago. It was mostly station wagons, but I picked it
up.
Oh,
that's the place, the wagon dealer.
Yeah, the
right?
Jason Saney.
Yeah, guys. Yeah, they sell all wagons.
Yeah. Straight station wagons. So.
An E30 wagon with M3 conversion stuff.
They'll do anything for you, man. You just gotta.
No, they do like Volvos. They have like CTSV wagons and AMG wagons. It's a wagon specific dealer. Yeah, yeah. Use secondhand wagons.
Like 2 days after my wedding, I was flying to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, to drive an E46 touring back for them back to Chicago. It was like an 03 with 75,000 miles on it, manual trans, sport package. Those were the only options.
That someone converted.
Nice. No.
Was it like a 328 wagon or something?
325.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. But it was silver, black interior with like brushed aluminum trim. So it was like cream of the crop.
Somebody offered me one for a one take that was converted to an M3. Mm-hmm. It had like M3 front fenders on it and an S54. Yeah. And I don't remember if he sold the car or broke the car or fuck, it might even be on the schedule and I forgot about it. I had too many cars. Maybe it'll show up. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. But it seems like a neat idea.
I really wish Americans would enjoy wagons a little bit more, but they just don't.
In the back of the New Road and Track, they have like the Ask Lutz column, and someone asked exactly that. They're like, why not? And he's like, we tried. We tried with CTSV.
Yeah.
We tried with this. He's like, the crossovers moved in at the same time, and like you basically lost it. It's like, it's got the package people like. It no longer has to sacrifice the driving dynamics that they used to have to sacrifice with an SUV. It's that's where they're going to go.
Which I think a lot of people feel like they get more. You know, like they see more metal there, and they go, "Well, for
like
the same
the taller
amount of money,
the car is the
yeah,
more."
They go, "For the same amount of money, I can have an X3 or a 3 Series wagon, and the X3 feels like more."
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean. You can see more out of it. Like you can, when I sit in a crossover SUV, like I can see farther down the highway, and I do like that. I would rather have a wagon because I'd prefer the driving dynamics and the looks of it. But if most people don't give a shit, they want what fits me the most, what makes me feel the safest, what can I see the most out of.
I also think in America, a lot of the customers in big cities drive the markets. New York, San Francisco, LA. These are what drives the markets. I'm not saying people only buy cars there, but like, as far as brand new cars go, you're looking at major metro areas, whereas the further out you go in the country, looking at used cars and stuff like that. And having just been to Europe, you know, like 2 days ago, driving there isn't like driving here. You know, driving in Europe is lovely. Even if there's some traffic, like it's not that big of a deal. Like the tarmac is better. The roads are windier. They maintain the shit better. The speeds are higher in general. There's more passing. You know, if I'm shopping for a Los Angeles car or a New York car, dude, driving in New York, driving in LA, that's as close to off-roading as you get. You know, and you may not need locking diffs and solid axles, but some more sidewall and a little more suspension travel, you know, that's a welcome thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I go to New York to visit my parents, you know, occasionally I'll get a press car that's something sporty and it's just fucking crash bang, you know, and then I get in my mom's Lexus crossover and I'm like, I fucking get this.
Dude,
I don't
remember we bubbled two tires on that E63 like got it at the airport.
E63 wagon.
Airport, boom, like big pothole, middle of the night, couldn't see, big pothole. got out of the car, looked, it's like bubbled both of them. Yeah. Great. Great start to
You know,
shoot.
That kind
of
shit. My dad had a 7 series, 750. And in 2 years, God, he fucking, what did he blow? 6 tires in 2 years going in and out of Manhattan? I mean, you know, and he bent 4 wheels. Like, I completely understand if you live in a place like this or a place like, my next car might very well be a crossover or an SUV. Just because having a Focus RS for 2 years, it beats the shit out of me. I fucking hate it.
Ooh. All right, the Lexus outside, so we can talk about that. The LC500 rides.
God damn, isn't it great?
I drove.
Nice looking.
LC500 is so good.
I drove down the block. I turned right. I drove half a block, and I went, how can I buy used one of these in 5 years? I swear to God, it's
that
like
car,
visibility, ergonomics, and then the suspension comfort is crazy.
Nobody, when I did a review of it, people were like, meh, it's Fortet, meh, meh. Dude, people want, that car is fantastic. Dude. It is so, when they told me, like, oh, you can, you got to drive one of these cars to the shoot in Vegas, then drive it back from, and the choice was Audi TTRS, Aston DB11 and the LC500. I was like, LC500!
I think it looks pretty good, too.
So good.
The first time I saw one in traffic, I had kind of forgotten that they were out in the wild.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is that?
Dude, I went to the bank today.
It looks pretty good.
This dude stopped me in traffic. I was blocking the fucking exit to the bank. And this dude, oh! And he's pulling up. Hold on, I got to get a pic. And he wanted every angle. He did a full lap.
Really?
And I was like, dude, I got to go. He's like, hold on, one more. And he come over to the window. Tell me everything about you. The people freak out when they see this car.
Huh.
It drives.
Looks like a spaceship.
Good. It drives so good, though. I love it. I love it so much. I want it. That car could keep me out of a 911. Potentially.
Really? That's a tall
for
order.
For LA driving.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Okay. That would make sense.
The one thing I don't love about it is actually the trunk is quite small. For a big car, it's got a real small trunk.
Hmm.
And that is annoying. And the mouse thing. It's a mouse interface.
It's like a touchpad mouse.
Yeah, it's a touchpad mouse. Weird. It's kind of a complicated interface.
Like, is it like the size of the Mercedes ones?
It's like probably 3 inches square.
Okay.
It's not like horrible, but it's a little complicated to get used to. It's not ideal, but everything else about it, from the comfort to the ride to the speed to the sound, is just about perfect.
Seats fit me.
The seats are perfect. Dude. Yeah. It's really a rock star of a car. Mm-hmm. And we've got a DB11 outside too.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Which is double the price. And, you know, even though the DB11's got a V12 with turbos on it, you know, even though it's an Aston, I was given the choice. You can drive either of these for a period of long drive, and I chose the Lexus.
Well, it's kind of funny. Like, I pulled in, I was like, oh, there's an Aston Martin here. And then I was like, oh, there's an LC500.
The LC is hot, dude.
Yeah.
It's real hot.
So you
should have a quick spin in it.
Okay.
It's really delightful.
Yeah, we'll see how many potholes we can take.
No, it's good. Yeah, it's good. The strut, the upper strut tower brace and the under the hood is a fucking work of art in that car. It's this really great CNC piece. It's really
super. Oh, really?
Cool. Yeah.
Nice. What do those things go for?
This one's probably going to be high 90s, 100.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. It's somewhere between
just
95
like Carrera,
and 105.
Like Carrera like level.
Yeah, the hybrid is a little cheaper. I think the hybrid starts at like 83, 84, and then the 500 is, I might be fucking that up. That might be backwards. I feel like the one I reviewed in Hawaii was like 95-ish.
Okay.
It ain't cheap.
Yeah.
But you get in and drive it, and it feels like 95 grand. For sure it feels like 95 grand. Yeah.
And, I mean, you can spend... You know, if you want to get like an SL, I mean, that's a different quote. That's a different class of car.
I think it's about the same.
It delivers the same stuff, like super comfy seats,
nice
looking inside outside technology, blah, blah, blah. Like, you don't need to spend 180
and the,
grand.
Yeah, the motor sounds great.
Motor sounds really good.
NAV8, 470 horsepower.
Feels super smooth.
You know, it's really, really, really good.
MSRP on the 500 is 92.
Yeah.
The hybrid is 96.5.
Okay. Oh. So hybrid's a little more,
which
but
makes sense.
You want the V8.
Can you get a sticker, an HOV sticker with a hybrid?
No. Mm-hmm. Only pure EVs in California now.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Okay. Even the Volts, you
can't
get them
I'm
anymore.
New here, sorry. I'm
yeah,
new
the
here.
Volts, you, they ran out of whatever the credits are. You can't get them for Volts anymore. Okay. It had only pure EVs.
But at Laguna Seca, we had a full like EV
event. Oh, yeah,
event
EV
going
time
on.
Attack,
yeah,
right?
Called Refuel. Yeah, there
what was
an EV
about?
Time trial going on, too.
Anything fast?
So, I did not
was it
look
like showroom
at
cars
times.
Or was it
some of them were showrooms
like
some
Teslas
of them were
and stuff?
But then there were also like 32 electric motorcycles there too.
Ooh.
Maybe
oh,
even
those
more
zeros
than that.
And
zeros
stuff?
Yeah,
what's that other one out of San Francisco? My buddy works for them.
I don't even know.
They're one of the more well Alta. Does that sound right? Alta Cycles.
I'd be lying if I said yes, and I'd be
I think
lying
my
if
friend
said,
from college works at one called Alta.
Okay,
yeah, Alta.
Alta. Yeah.
Okay.
And there's also Energica.
Energica?
Energica.
Those things sounded nuts, though, coming down the front straight.
Just
yeah.
That.
Yeah, it was that. Insane. Like, they almost sounded like muffled down MotoGP bikes.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I bet an electric motard or an electric dirt bike would be so fun.
Yeah.
It'd be so
Actually, I got
fun.
To ride one around the paddock, and it was surprisingly quick.
Well, they're got to be, I mean, all the with all the torque and stuff, they got to be dumb fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they have no gears, right? Just one gear. Yeah.
So it's like electric motorcycles are perfect for a beginner.
Yeah.
And you can dial down the power too.
Yeah, you could probably like, power by knob, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So or through the menu or through an app or something crazy. But no, it's literally
I understand
it's a great
the appeal.
Beginner sure. motorcycle.
Yeah. So did you get any lap times or anything like that?
Yeah, let me look them up real quick.
Keeps and there were cars as well, right?
Yes.
So some production cars, some custom crazy things?
Yeah, there were a lot of Teslas this event. There was also like it almost like
to
a Daewoo
Tesla, Time Attack.
It was a car called a Koda.
Oh yeah,
the Koda like
Spada-tronica or something like that.
So that was out.
Yeah, those things were fucking terrible. In general, they're really terrible. It'd be interesting to watch that. Are there any? Is it almost break time? Is that what you're indicating? Okay, just so we don't crash Zach's computer. If Austin, you got some lap times?
Yeah, it looks like the fastest car was a 151.5.
That's not bad. What kind of car that was?
It was a Roadster, Tesla Roadster.
Tesla Roadster.
Yep.
Tesla Roadster. I bet because they've had an update, right? They had a software update or a battery pack update or some kind of update to those Roadsters that made them faster.
I think so. There was one guy that was running his Tesla Roadster all weekend in preparation for it. I bet it was that guy. He showed up on Friday.
And he probably had real and tires Saturday. And shit too,
yeah,
right?
I think he had like 808s or
something.
Yeah.
Is
there a way
it's like an Elise chassis.
Would it be beneficial if they could like shorten the gearing or artificially shorten the gearing because that's a 2-speed car?
No, they're not.
The Tesla Roadster?
Mm-mm.
I thought the original was a 2-speed.
The prototype was, but they never made them that way. I drove a Tesla at Willow Springs. I drove a Tesla Roadster, and it was not good.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't enjoy it at all.
A long way.
It has all kind of wonky shit going on at the front end. Yeah. I did not enjoy. I really liked the idea of the electric track car because it really fucking sailed you down the track. I mean, to be on a racetrack. You know, not quite silently, but electric powered. I really thought that was interesting, and it was fast, obviously in a straight line, but the chassis dynamics of it. I mean, it felt like an Elise with a giant backpack on, you know, and just nothing at the front end. I mean, who knows? Maybe if a guy is serious about tracking it, you know, maybe you can do an alignment and tires or do you, I'm sure 151 is not terrible. That's not bad at all.
No.
I mean, that's kind of impressive actually. I'm sure you could do some things that would improve the dynamics and also you could practice driving it too. But I got 5 laps and I was like, oh, this is weird as shit. And it was kind of fun, but also kind of sketch.
Yeah. Yeah. Not having gears, I think, is the weirdest thing. Like not having it feel like
yeah,
it shifts.
Because gears help you do math. Yeah. They help you do very important math where it's like you're not necessarily watching your speed, but if you're in fourth gear at the top of the RPM, like you kind of know.
Yeah.
Whereas with no gears,
it's
you got no idea.
It's like in NorCal, there's that snowmobile powered Miata that has a CVT trans in it. Mm-hmm. And literally, you're just on the gas. And the RPM stay constant, and the bike, like the car, is accelerating.
It's like driving a go kart.
So weird,
just a fast one.
Yeah,
you know, same kind of thing.
Yeah, but in a go kart, you hit the limiter. You know, at a certain point, you kind of know this thing. It just keeps going and going and going faster than you know.
It's like 1 millimeter is 5 miles an hour. Or,
yeah,
you know, yeah. That's what I was talking online with Dan Neal about what an electric drift car would be like, and I thought maybe they would find a way to simulate a transmission.
Really interesting.
He's like, no, it'd be single speed. I'm like, yeah, but think of the crazy ninja Yoda throttle modulation you have to do.
You could almost have a button that just like locks the rear motors to like initiate the slide and then you could release it. Yeah.
But then think of like a P85D, you know, it goes from 0 to like 130 with one pedal with one gear. So if you had to modulate, you know, from 60 miles per hour wheel speed to 90, that's like what, half an inch of pedal travel, or it's an inch. Like you don't really know. It seems like
without the sound of an engine, it would be very tough to modulate a drift car. Really tough.
It's already hard enough for me to play Forza on mute.
Totally.
Yeah, I tried playing Forza on mute at the Forza 7 launch really event. Tough. It was super hard, and then they're like, you know, there's headphones right there. I was like, oh. Okay.
Yeah, that was key. Yeah. Yeah, you can't do that. You don't know what RPM you're at. You can't just watch the thing and go, oh, orange, red, oh, turn? I don't know.
Yeah. It was a challenge. All right, we got to take a break real quick so Zach's computer doesn't crash, and I can refill my burr, and then we'll be back. We got plenty. I think we got a bunch of questions on Facebook actually that are leading us in different directions. For real, cool. For real. We'll be back. All right, let's talk about AMSOIL. Many drivers today are looking to move beyond stock performance. AMSOIL brings that spirit to the engineering of their synthetic motor oil, combining top-tier synthetic technology with unique additives. The result is an oil capable of protecting your engine up to 25,000 miles or 1 year in between oil changes. AMSOIL synthetic motor oil shields your engine from two of the biggest bumps in the road, wear and deposits. Wear on pistons and cams can lead to a host of issues, including loss of power. AMSOIL provides 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than required by an industry standard. Deposits on rings and pistons can lead to compression loss, compromising fuel economy and power. AMSOIL synthetic motor oil delivers piston cleanliness 93% above an industry standard. The proof isn't just academic. AMSOIL tests in the field and on the track in extreme conditions and using the most demanding high-performance engines available. Check out AMSOIL.com/smokingtire for more information. That's AMSOIL.com/smokingtire. AMSOIL, devoted to protection. And we're all excited because Forza Motorsport 7 was just announced. Forza Motorsport and Forza Horizon 3 are the official racing simulators of the Smoking Tire podcast, but right now it's all about Forza Motorsport 7. Enjoy gorgeous graphics at 60 frames per second and true 4K resolution in HDR color. Collect over 700 Forza Vista cars, including the largest assortment of Ferraris, Porsches, and Lamborghinis ever. Master over 30 famous environments with race conditions that change every time you race. And coming out of E3, we are feeling great about 18 video game awards won. 18 awards! That's more than like Titanic and Citizen Kane and Casablanca. This thing is smoking the award shows.
None of those won video game awards.
A lot of big other racing games showed up to E3 this year, but Forza won 18 awards. And we played the GT2 RS, which is an all-new car that isn't even a real car yet. It's not. Porsche won't even acknowledge the existence of this car, and yet here it is on the cover of Forza 7. We tried the new Semi-Truck Racing, which has an acronym that I've already forgotten that Greenwald told us about. And we've raced in the rain. We tried the new Dubai circuit. All of it is really sick. The colors, the detail in the graphics, the sound effects, and the driving dynamics are all top-notch. Check it out at xbox.com/Forza or at forzamotorsport.net. And as I said, Forza Motorsport is the official racing simulator of the Smoking Tire podcast. What else we got? Oh, drivinggear.com. You see me wearing these Pelote driving shoes. And if you are a serious driver, if you're a track driver, sooner or later, you are going to want some driving gear. And whether it's gloves, helmets, accessory bags, Nomex apparel, fireproof stuff for track days or for racing, driving gear has you covered. And that's driving-gear.com. If you use code TSTFAN, that's all one word, TSTFAN, use code TSTFAN at checkout, get 10% off your entire order plus free shipping, whether that's on Pelote shoes, accessories, Nomex gear, or whatever from drivinggear.com. That's code TSTFAN, 10% off your entire order. Lastly, who do I want to plug? How about Beeline Coffee? I drink a lot of Beeline Coffee, and I'm not even bullshitting. I actually, people think that I just like spout this shit out my mouth. I don't. I have like a dozen bags of Beeline Coffee in my kitchen. You see why I'm so energetic right now? It's because I'm on Beeline Coffee. This stuff is delicious. It is very caffeinated.
To Italy. We were drinking 4 or 5 espresso a day.
Not as strong as Beeline Coffee. Nope. I drank more espresso in Italy last week than I've ever drank in my life, and it was not as energy-giving as Beeline Coffee. Normally, I would say that when you take a coffee and you make it car-themed, that would be exceptionally cheeseball. if the coffee wasn't delicious. But the coffee happens to be delicious. There's rare coffee, single origin coffee. They have five or six different brews now, and I've tried all of them. They're all really good. And it's top quality stuff. It's like on par with the Intelligentsia, Blue Bottle, the top level coffees for real coffee connoisseurs. This isn't your Dunkin' Donuts or your Starbucks shit.
It's like
shit.
Race fuel for your body.
This is not just that. It's like, it's really, really, if you really love coffees, this is the high quality coffee. Use code TST at checkout and get 10% off your entire order. They also have a monthly subscription program where you will get new coffees every month delivered right to your door. And I forget exactly how much it is, if I'm honest, but that discount does apply to the monthly coffee thing as well as with any pounds of coffee you just buy. So Beeline Coffee Company, BeelineCoffee.com, and code TST gets you 10% off your entire order at checkout. Okay. Do you want to plug anything, Austin?
Yeah. Adam reminded me, last time I was on the show a couple years ago, I didn't plug our podcast that Adam Jabay and I do called Slip Angle.
Slip Angle Podcast.
So, hosted on Shout Engine.
Yeah.
So we're in the family.
ShoutEngine.com/Slip Angle?
Slip Angle TrackTune.com. So
wait, what?
It's called Slip Angle by TrackTune.com. Easiest way to find it.
On iTunes?
Go to TrackTuned.com and you can click podcast or in iTunes. Slip Angle, no space.
Austin and Adam are funny fuckers. Austin came
looks
up,
aren't everything, man.
Did you, was it you or me who came up with the idea to do the Time Attack commentating
from
in the
race? Yeah, we
were in
like Thursday night before the event.
Like, what if we did commentating from inside the race?
I'm going to release that because I recorded it.
That was
I'm
good,
release
actually.
That as our show, I think, on Friday.
I have no idea what that sounded like.
I think it sounded pretty good.
People
it's not good in the paddock.
People came up to me after we did that, and they were like, dude, that was awesome. Even JR said that that was one of the funniest things he's seen someone do.
It was great, man.
Is actually commentate from inside the Time Attack.
I was disappointed that we didn't get him in on it like we were talking about doing.
Yeah, we'll have to do it maybe if he's coming to Road Atlanta. Yeah. The next, I think for Formula Drift, imagine that, where if you had a chase car with someone commentating from the chase car in Formula Drift.
That'd be so great.
That could be kick-ass. Yeah, it'd be really, really
good. You should ride right seat.
Yeah.
Totally serious.
I think they'd probably be upset with the weight distribution upset.
In like the demonstration stuff.
Oh, in the demonstration
stuff, like
car.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You could ride in that Infiniti 4-seat drift car. That
do those cars have Bluetooth? I don't think they have Bluetooth. I think
put his think,
oh
his
your helmet with your Bluetooth
thing.
My motorcycle helmet Bluetooth
with your Senna Bluetooth unit. Lastly, I want to plug. Of course, I mean you guys probably know this by now. If you're listening to the show, new one takes every Monday through Thursday on our YouTube channel. We have a lot of interesting stuff coming up, including this show goes up Wednesday.
Thursday? But this week.
One Wakes, which are my boat reviews, which are either going to be amazing and redefine the whole channel, or they're going to be shit and nobody's going to watch them and we'll phase them out very, very quickly. I hope, I hope they go well. I really like doing these boats. It's a lot of fun.
We could be HD video. We could be Blu-ray.
Dude, it's all. I hope people like them because I really enjoy doing the boats and I filmed 7 so far. And if the first few go well and get a good response, I'll start filming more. I'm not going to film more until we know how the first few do. But
when I buy my sailboat, I'll let you do it. Because I think my wife and I are currently looking at living on a sailboat.
I would love to do...
Or King Harbor.
You're already a pretty relaxed dude. I mean, you'd go...
Living on a sailboat would be amazing. I'd be so jealous and I would want to hear everything about it.
It's cheap.
I know.
It's cheap to do.
I know. You really... What you have to do is part with all your stuff.
Which is what we already did. Moving here. Yeah. We're from 5,000 square feet in Atlanta to 600 square feet here. Literally,
so you're halfway there.
At the end, I tried to sell stuff, and if it wasn't sold, I was just calling people to come get it.
If I could find a way to do it in a practical way, I have 3 cats, I've got a bunch
for
of
now.
Cars. Yeah, oh, that's dark. Cold. That's really cold. I would love. I'd be super jealous. I've always dreamed on living on a boat, and one day I'd like to find a way to do it. Like me and Hannah were fortunate enough that we get to do it for little bits and pieces, between vacations and stuff
that. You should buy a boat. I'll rent it from you to live on it. When you want to take it out, I'll just stay in the house.
That's fucking gangster as fuck.
We'll house swap it.
We can just swap.
Yeah.
Oh, that's baller.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
My wife would be completely down for it, too.
I like that idea. Is she allergic to cats?
No.
All right.
Nope.
If I buy a boat and then you
live
rent,
on it
rent
and,
the
like,
boat
keep
for,
it clean.
Yeah, you rent the boat for me.
Yeah.
And then when I want to go out on the boat, oh,
yeah, we just
that's
stay in the house.
Good idea.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
I'd be completely down
with that.
That's a good idea. That's not a bad idea. No. And used boats are fucking cheap.
Like,
used sailboats are nothing.
Like, I've been looking at like Catalina 36s for
that's
like...
small to live on. A 36 is a very small boat to live on.
That's my budget, though.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, working backwards from, you know, from budget, it makes sense.
It
because
is bigger
money's
than
real.
An ambulance, though, which at one point I was planning on living in the ambulance.
I mean, me, Zach, Thad, and Tom lived on a 48, which if it was just two people, I could probably live on that full time, actually.
Yeah, dude, that
but,
was
but
spacious.
A 36, that was a catamaran, a 36 monohull, that's a small boat.
Well, with how busy I am, like, this is... From now until the end
what
of
about your
September.
Girl?
Well, she'd be fine. She'd be fine. So
a 36 is a small boat, model sailboat to live on
yeah,
full time.
I think
is.
She'd be fine fine with it as long as she didn't have to work. That's the deal.
Are you dating Drew Barrymore from 50 First Dates
yeah,
where
right?
She wakes up and you're like, no, we live,
we
in,
live
a,
on a
we,
boat.
We live in an ambulance
no,
today.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I guess I agree to that.
No, she's just really, really cool chick.
It would nice. Also depend on like configuration of boat and whatnot. Like you could probably... figure out how
really,
to make
it'd be
a 36 work.
Place
you,
for me to sleep in LA because I'm out so much doing stuff.
I understand that.
Yeah.
I get where you're coming from. I do. I couldn't personally live on a boat that was smaller than like a 45 or so.
Yeah.
Just because everything is really
well,
small.
That's you, well, that's why you buy 36. The 36 to go sailing and my wife and I will rent it from you.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
It's
I,
not
you,
a bad
she
idea.
She would be completely down with it.
We will see.
Yeah.
You, I mean, use
right
sailboats
Marina
are
Del
really
Rey.
Cheap. If you could, if you were looking at a sailboat from like the early 2000s,
yeah.
You know, they're
think about it. You
they're
wouldn't
cheap,
even have to worry
man.
About
15%
parking.
Of the original sale price.
Yeah. Know,
they're fucking cheap.
The boat's sale
off.
Price.
Oh.
That was
really terrible.
Take a lap.
It's really, really
pretty
terrible.
Pretty shitty.
What was the name of your podcast again? So
Slip Angle.
Slip Angle Podcast.
No space.
Oh, but actually,
oh, I should probably
real
also
question,
plug
what do people
my,
talk about on it? What do you talk about on the
oh,
show?
Oh, it's all track day stuff, wheel-to-wheel stuff, and a little bit of autocross.
Cool.
So people that enjoy driving in somewhat controlled
it's racing nerd stuff.
Yeah.
It's great.
So,
but
it's
not
more,
but not motorsports coverage. It's recreational
no.
recreational
yeah.
driving and racing.
It's like, yeah, just your... The whole idea of it was, we, you know, Adam and I met at the track, and we started realizing we were having really good conversations after the track went cold. Like, you know, you pop open a beer after the track goes cold and have a good conversation. And we started realizing that maybe we should record it. And so we did. And now 155, 156 episodes later.
Is it that many?
Yeah.
Fucking hell, you guys have done
just
a lot
over
of shows.
2 years.
Wow,
yeah.
Good for you.
We had John Morton on because he lives just down in
oh,
El Segundo.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
yeah.
We had him on. We did a two-parter with him. So
OG.
That was really cool.
Yeah. You guys know about car build, you know about track setup, you know
yeah.
about driving. So
Adam knows
a
lot about
knowledge.
Budget racing.
Yeah,
that
a lot about
go,
budget racing.
He goes real fast in a terrible car.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a blast doing it.
No, I'm not talking shit. He goes, yeah. His car is rough, but yeah. It goes.
But we, you know, all of us kind of, we just live it and breathe it.
That's great.
So I guess I should plug my other employer here in LA, Speed Ventures.
Track day company.
Yeah.
People are like, how do you go to track days? Track days, it's like a third party deal.
Yep.
Right? So like, there's the racetrack itself, and then a company rents the track, and then the company rents spots to you. And Speed Ventures is one of those companies.
Yep. One of the largest, actually, in the country. We do
yeah,
28 events a year.
It's a big one.
Yeah.
There's a few out there. There's Speed Ventures is good. Speed District on the West Coast. My friend Josh runs that. So that's a fun one as well. And there's a few other ones around the country, but Speed Ventures is a good one.
Yeah.
For sure.
So
I'm trying to get... I think... You have a Button Willow event in October?
Yeah, October
September 13th? Or October?
Ooh.
I think 13th. It's the same weekend as Pirelli World Challenge at Laguna, so I kind of have to choose if I'm going to go
well,
to work.
Well, I think that's the first Speed Ventures. That's the first Button Willow track day I can make with the Mustang.
Okay.
Because I tried to go to this track day with SVRA, with this, the vintage racing, and literally the night...
Oh, you have to have... Full safety equipment.
Yeah, the night before, someone was like, you know you got to have full cage. Like, oh, fuck me. So I don't think... So I think that's the first one I can actually make.
Okay.
But I'll come out to that with the Mustang for sure.
Also,
I've been meaning
ready.
To go. I'm 100%. I'm not delay of gaming. It's literally like, I got a job. Yeah. You know? And throughout the summer, like, we have to work every single fucking weekend this whole summer.
Like, I'm starting to get into, like, some coaching a little bit, too. At not the events that I work at, but... We actually, I helped somebody in an S2000 at Laguna that had done like 15 or 20 track days. We found him 4 seconds.
Wow.
Oh. Just in sitting with him for one session.
Data? Looking at data?
No.
Really?
Just literally me riding and being like, yeah, you can break a lot later here and a lot harder.
It's hard to find balls sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially the pro courses.
At Button Willow and stuff, it's not as bad, but like Laguna, Mid Ohio, Road America, Road Atlanta.
Road America, it's tough to get through your head, where
they bring spectators like right up to the action.
Yeah, yeah.
That also means there's a wall there to protect the spectator.
Right.
And
well, some of the straights are very long, so your speeds are big. I mean, I've driven press cars at Laguna Seca that were hitting 120, 30 on the straight, and you know, so if you're trying to get each tenth and break, I mean, I'm not good at high speed threshold late braking. Like, I do not have a lot of experience in it. Yeah. It's something I need to work on. So I can understand why you could find people a lot of time there, because that's something.
Yeah, I mean, if you can break at the three instead of the five, next time you go to the track,
like one of your first sessions, just start braking at like at the first brake marker. Like if there's five brake markers, start at the five and just jam on the brakes. Jam on them. Know that you have tons of space. Obviously, check your mirrors. Make sure no one's like right behind you.
And just see how early.
Yeah, and just see how the car actually reacts at speed to stopping.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'll be really, really surprised.
We were just in Italy and went to Alfa Romeo's test track.
Nice.
Which is a really interesting test track. And I find that to understand cars, it really helps to see where they're from. And so, like for instance, you completely understand 60s muscle cars if you go to Woodward Avenue.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It makes a lot of... If your worldview was Detroit, that explains all of American cars in the 60s. Those people never left fucking Detroit. And that's why those cars didn't turn, and they floated, you know, and they took bumps well. And
they weren't cars with truck frames. They were trucks with car bodies.
Right, exactly.
It's like potholes and everything.
And so the 4C I've driven a couple times, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense anywhere. And I was like, okay, Alpha's test track. Like, it's got to make sense here, right? Not really.
Really?
Strangely enough, not really. Well, I'll tell you, the 4C, I think history will look on the 4C very kindly, because ultimately being pretty and sounding cool outweighs pretty much everything over the course of history. You know what I mean? And being light, that takes over everything the farther you get from production. But I don't think I've ever driven a fucking car, a modern car, that got squirrelier when braking from 140.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing, the ass end dances around like Shakira when you're threshold braking from 140. Man, oh my God, what is going on? And there are certain corners in this track. It's a beautiful little track. It's very narrow. It's not, you could never wheel to wheel on it. It's probably 2/3 the width of most circuits.
Yeah.
And has some very interesting corner combinations. And it's very pretty. And you know, like most proving grounds, it's really neat. Yeah. It's a big track. It's 3.2 kilometers. No, it's 5 kilometers.
And they have 73 kilometers of stuff there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
it's 5 kilometer
ring
circuit.
And a drag thing.
Pretty
and
neat.
A speed loop and
pretty neat. But yeah, just speaking of threshold braking, this thing fucking shakes its ass like nothing.
Did you try trail braking it at all? Because there's some cars, like when they're designing it, they're like, oh, people are trail braking this all the time.
It's weird
better.
The way that this course is there's not a lot of proper trail braking opportunities. There's a lot of straight into hairpin,
like 90,
and like
yeah.
it's not. There's not a lot of everything. Is a weird late apex or a double. It's different. But it was really a really neat opportunity. That's for Drive on NBC Sports. It's coming out this fall.
Cool.
And I enjoyed the experience, and the car was, you know, is what I expected. It's the same as it usually is.
Yeah. Did you have the Velcro knee pads in on the side?
No.
Have you seen those? Yeah, they have like I guess on the carbon fiber tub on the side.
No, I didn't have Velcro knee pads.
There's Velcro knee pads there.
No, I had the door. I don't know. I didn't see that.
Yeah, I guess people were complaining or something.
Their knees were getting bruised.
Yeah. That happened.
I complained in the
the BRZ FRS about my knee getting bruised on there, and they added pads.
And more recently in the
ND Miata, my knees got bruised, and the Fiat 124, which they said got different doors, but it did not.
I think my first time to California and hanging out with you was when you had the ND press car.
Oh yeah, so, yeah, yeah.
And we drove it. I think we drove it to Santa Monica.
Probably,
it was a tight fit, and I'm not a big dude.
It's little. Me and a dude that's my size just did 4 hours in Italy in the Fiat 124. Oh, I was little.
I surprisingly saw a 124 this morning.
I saw one this morning
and,
as well.
But we saw a couple of NDs in Italy.
In Italy, yeah.
And they were the correct choice for where we were.
They were lovely. You know, I drove the new Alfa Stelvio with a crossover, which...
How was that?
Well, okay, so at first I drove it in the city, in Milan, and, you know, it's a Turbo 4. It's not the Quadrifoglio engine. It's a 2-liter Turbo 4, 200... And it's 200 horsepower and 270 torque, I think.
Decent amount of torque.
Decent amount of torque. It's 3,500 pounds. What it is, picture the Mazda CX-5.
My wife has one.
Right. The new one? It.
No, not a new one. It's a 14.
Okay. Is that the newest generation?
They did a facelift, this year, I think, or last year.
Picture the newest generation CX-5.
Okay.
With more torque, but... really terrible bottom end throttle response. Mm. So off the line, it's got nothing. Like, it's probably 4 seconds, 0 to 30.
Huh.
But once you get the turbo smoking on boil, not bad. And it feels light and it's got a really quick steering rack. And at pace, it feels like a CX-5 with more power.
Interesting.
So do not compare it to a Macan.
Okay.
That's going to be everyone's mistake.
Did you ever drive like a Volkswagen Tiguan with like a manual and a TSI?
I hate it.
Yeah.
I never drove.
I mean, it's a GTI chassis.
I drove one
chassis.
Like around the block. I hate it.
It's a GTI chassis.
I liked the CX-5, but it was slow.
Yeah.
This is like a CX-5 with power, but you got to wind it out.
Did you ever go through a CX-5 around in the corner?
Yeah. Shockingly good. Yeah. That's what the Stelvio is like. Stelvio is like that. It feels light on its feet, and it rotates, and it's got a really quick steering rack, and it's got really responsive paddle shift gearbox. It doesn't feel like
a dual clutch.
No, it's a ZF 8-speed.
Okay,
it doesn't feel like it's built like a Macan. It's like in between CX-5 Macan. The build quality, think Ford Edge build quality.
Okay,
so like solid. Yeah. No, not horrible. And it's a totally decent car. It was comfortable. It's stable at speed. The brakes are decent. But don't compare it to a Macan. It's cheaper than the Macan. It's more expensive than the CX-5, and it drives like a CX-5 that has more power.
Quick correction. It has 280 horsepower and 306 foot-pounds of torque.
Oh, wow. Are you sure?
I'm reading it off of,
the 2.0T?
So it's like Civic Type R power.
The 2.0T? If that's correct, then JF told me the wrong engine specs for what we have, for the one we had. He told me 197 horsepower and 275 pounds of torque.
Then he told you wrong, and I'll talk to him.
Well, that better be corrected before the TV show comes out. What did you say that was?
280 horsepower and 306 torque.
In the 2-liter four-cylinder?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that could be right.
It's a turbo?
It is a turbo.
It's a turbo. You know,
it only right. it makes power from 4 to 62. It makes got nothing
like
below that.
170 or 180 or
and
something.
And the
CX-9. CX-5 is slow.
The CX-9 is like 240 and 280.
It's a lovely little car,
you know,
but it's slow.
That's like a bigger engine, but it's still slow.
All right, well, those numbers might be correct. I'll believe you. You're reading them off something. But
I'm reading them off Motor Trend.
It's entirely possible. I didn't get a Monroney on the car. I would literally, whatever JF told me, is I parroted. You know, and it felt reasonably quick. I would believe those numbers. Mm-hmm. When you got it going, it felt reasonably quick.
What's
it felt
be nice
faster
about
on.
It?
I drove that and the 124 on Stelvio Pass, and the Stelvio was definitely faster.
Yeah.
On the Stelvio Pass.
What'll be nice about it? Well, I mean, it is its namesake.
Yeah, that but it was very on the nose.
What'll be nice about it though is that it'll be kind of unique. You know, you won't see them around.
Yeah,
all
if
the
you
time.
Want to get something different, yeah. It was.
And that's
not,
why, like, I have a Triumph motorcycle because you don't see them around.
It wasn't all the bad time. At all. Like, I don't think it's the prettiest thing out there, but it wasn't like heinous.
Yeah. So you're saying your next car might be a crossover? Would that be one that you would look?
It's
at?
It's not. I don't think it's for me.
Okay.
I do not think
more
it's for
like
me.
Macan or
my housemate has a Macan that I drive a lot.
Oh yeah,
I love it.
I was supposed to ride in the back of that thing with you.
I love it.
We're supposed to go skiing.
It's expensive. This thing is 70 grand. It's not cheap, but it is great.
Yeah, they handle really, really
I probably won't really buy a crossover. My next car is either going to be a 911 or a Hellcat Jeep. Those are the two things it'll probably be.
Hellcat Jeep would be sweet.
I know, but it'll also be silly for sitting in traffic, just like a 911 would. So, what else? Was there something else in Italy that I wanted to discuss? I don't remember. Drive on NBC Sports is going to be coming in September.
Stelvio Pass is very crowded.
Stelvio Pass is a shit road unless you're there at 7 in the morning.
Huh.
The traffic is fucked.
Oh, so it's not enthusiast traffic. It's just traffic.
No, it's just traffic. It's a nightmare.
I think a lot of it, though, is enthusiast motorcycle traffic. Like,
yeah, it's enthusiasts, like, but there's motorcyclists. But it's all the enthusiasts.
It's all the enthusiasts. It's motorcyclists on motorcyclists passing bicycles with some cars in there.
Well, like
any
article of like the best driving roads in the world, like that's always
it's
like
cars passing bicycles and motorcycles passing them. And buses and shit. Like, it's a fucking nightmare. The roads going to the Stelvio Pass are incredible. And the scenery is great, and, like, the vibe is great. But if you actually want to drive the Stelvio Pass, you need to be there at 7 in the morning.
It's like Deals Gap. Like, Deals Gap is great, but even, like, the roads and the scenery around there are phenomenal.
Filming there was a nightmare.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was terrible.
So you have to go at night. That's when you have to go. Growing up, my dad...
No, we got there at 6 a.m.
Okay.
And it was
great.
Lightly traveled until 8:30.
It was great.
So growing up, my dad and uncle and grandfather actually owned a store there. And so
on
that's
Deals Gap or Stelvio?
Yeah, no, Deals Gap, not Stelvio.
But there's stores on top of Stelvio Pass.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a little village on top of Stelvio Pass with like a couple restaurants and bars and some stores and like three hotels.
Probably been there for like 50 years.
Yeah, you can go stay in a hotel on top of Stelvio Pass. It's spectacular.
Question is, do they sell donuts like they do at Pikes Peak?
They sell espresso.
Okay.
And pizza. And pastries.
Some
creations. Yeah.
And a lot of trinket stuff and t-shirts.
And there's hiking and shit up there.
What's the elevation there?
3,200 meters, I think it is. Or maybe 2,300 meters.
It's above tree line.
It's up there.
9,000 feet.
It's up there.
Yeah. Maybe their tree line's lower because they're
I need to put together a Europe trip sometime and just do everything.
Going in September.
Just go ball out.
Plug Adventure Drives. It's going to be Munich to Munich. Round trip. We're going out of Munich south through Switzerland, Austria, Italy, and then back to Munich. I'm going with Hannah.
Do you need a trunk monkey?
I'm bringing I believe I'm driving a Giulia Quadrifoglio, I believe.
That'll be cool.
Which would be lovely. What else? Oh, before we got some questions. Before we get there real quick, I picked up the Benz from I had some things done to it. Ultimate daily driver is what I'm going for because I got this Focus RS, right, as a daily driver, and then I learned that it was a shit daily driver. So then I had to get a daily driver. Someone fucking keyed the Focus last week.
I saw that.
Yeah, I had to drop it off to get painted. Fuck. But Anthony at Exotic Car is taking care of my Focus painting needs. But so took the SL to BBI. I had new Bilstein dampers and the Eurospec H&R springs, which dropped the ride height an inch, and now it sits perfect. Now it's nice. I also got Pilot Supersport tires, and I got a new steering damper. So the steering has a damper in the power steering. It's like $40, and I was like, fuck it, I might as well just get it. Apparently, it takes 5 minutes to put on. So I just got all that, and then I had BBI do an alignment, and now, dude, the car drives so good now. It's beautiful. Tracks perfectly straight. It rides great, like a brand. It turns out my 16-year-old shocks were basically toast. You know, even with only 50,000 miles in the car, toast. And so before, like, it was fine. It was just like a little sloppy, and I kind of thought, that's how it is. But they're like, no, your dampers should probably. So I got these new Bilsteins, and which is the OEM shock. Nothing strange. Cheap. I think it was $300 for the set. And then there was a small leak in the diff, so they resealed the diff and the new diff fluid. I had a service done on the car. There's like an A and a B service. So like every 4,000 or 5,000 miles, an A, and every 10,000 is B. So I had the B service done. And then Clarion, I hit up Clarion. I was like, I just need to get some Bluetooth in this thing. And they're like, look, we ain't going to lift a finger for Bluetooth. But if you want to do some shit, you want to fucking little fucking spiff on this thing, you know, we could do something. And so I didn't ask, but they offered. And I was like, I'm not going to say no to this opportunity. So we did a period correct, almost. Not quite period. It's new technology. But we did a flip out, Clarion flip out, which has a backup camera in it. Garmin Nav software, with traffic, XM, Bluetooth, and USB, with a custom sub box that goes on the shelf behind the seats.
It looks really nice.
Match leather.
Really nice.
With the amp embedded in it, two 10s, We kept the standard front speakers because apparently they're very high quality, but we did a new amp that was like, it's all dialed in. The whole thing is dope. And it's like 1,000 watts.
Man.
And it bumps. It bumps really fucking hard.
Did they leave space for you to put like a Nintendo 64 in and go like real period yeah. correct?
You could. There's yeah. inputs. There's and there's a DVD player in there too. I could definitely play DVDs. The new flip outs, like when it's closed, there's
doesn't look
a
like anything?
Well, there's no, it does. You can see something there, but okay. there's a LCD display, so you don't have to flip it out all the time, like because you're mostly
annoying.
Like Bluetoothing music or whatever.
Yeah.
So you can do your basic controls with it closed. You don't need to flip it out. But when you put the car in reverse, it flips out. You have backup camera, and then it closes when you go back in the drive.
Are the motors any faster in those things now for the flip up?
It's probably what.
Because like back in the day, it used to take
probably 4 seconds to flip out.
It's not that bad at all.
Like honestly, the delay for the flip out camera for me, like because I just reverse back, like it's a little slow for me to be like useful for backing out of like a parking space.
Can you turn it on with a button like as you approach a spot?
Yes, if the screen is opened, I can activate it with a button. I can go to hit the menu and then pull up the backup camera. Yes. Mm-hmm. I can also pull it up while I'm driving as a rearview mirror.
Yeah.
Nice.
But so far, pretty goddamn impressed. It sounds really good. And the box, they match the leather. Like, if you couldn't see the amp, it almost looks like there's nothing there at all. But it sounds good. I was Bluetoothing music from my phone, and I made a Bluetooth phone call that was clear as day.
Nice.
It's awesome. So shout out. I'm going to do a video about Ultimate Daily Driver. I'm super excited about this car. It looks great. It drives great. It rides beautiful. It's comfortable. I'm going to Rise Against on Friday. Sorry, Zach. Going to Rise Against in San Diego on Friday.
The question I have is, what is the first song that you listen to?
Picture Me Rolling.
Nice.
Picture Me Rolling by Tupac. Picture Me Rolling in my 500 Benz.
That's pretty fitting.
It's great. I'm super, super excited about these cars.
I saw one at a used car lot, like down in like Torrance.
Mm-hmm.
It was red.
Was it tempting?
It was. It really was. Like it looked like it had just been washed.
You could sleep in that.
These cars have aged really well, dude. It looks great.
Yeah.
It had the
hard top too. Like it was a
red with a hard top.
Yeah.
It must have been expensive.
$69.95.
Oh really?
Nice,
then it must be
yellow
fucked.
Stickers.
If it's that cheap, it's got some real expensive problem.
I was
problem.
Looking at it. Because I was like right in front of it, and you know the windshield wipers
uh-huh.
for the headlights.
Uh-huh.
One of them was like
one of them was cockeyed.
Yeah.
Mine I got lucky.
No, it was,
mine
it
does
was
not
enticing
have those.
You.
Yeah, it was huh? winking at me.
Yeah, there were some options that mine doesn't have the glass roof. Mine has the full hard roof, and mine does not have the headlight wipers. And I'm super happy that it doesn't have the headlight wipers.
Yeah.
Apparently they're really expensive
the
to fix.
Too.
Yeah, they're expensive to fix if they fuck up. You know what? But I do have I have xenon lights.
Oh really?
Yeah, xenon lights, heated seats. Cruise control, you know, power, everything. Yeah, that's good. I don't have automatic headlights, but they are xenon.
Yeah,
I'm fucking stoked. And I went up a couple semi steep like driveways today.
Cleared
fine. Yeah, it didn't scrape. No worries. And it doesn't ride like a slammed car. It rides like it's supposed to ride. I mean, I'm really really excited. So shout out to BBI for hooking up that stuff. I paid for that. And shout out to Clarion for hooking up the system, which I did not pay for. But it's great. It is great. I'm really excited about the flip out and the fucking system with bumps. The trip to Rise Against. I may take the hard roof off and roll the Rise Against. Top design.
Is that
and,
a soft top
and
then
valet
you can put up when you get there? No.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Yeah, yeah. You take the hard roof off and there's a soft top under
okay.
it. Yeah.
I feel like that's a car that you'd need to like valet at a concert.
Oof.
Roll up.
At an amphitheater? there's no valet.
At a show with a band that's like against the establishment and the 1%.
Yeah, right? Rise Against and Deftones?
Yeah.
That'd I can't figure. Show. I haven't. It's going to be an awesome show, but I can't. I'm trying to figure out who's playing first. I think Deftones is probably playing first, but I don't want Rise Against to be. I don't want Rise Against to be opening for Deftones. Rise Against is the headline band.
Yeah.
I'm really excited. The last time I saw Rise Against in Anaheim, they had a killer set, and I bought these tickets that were like on the side, and the sound quality was dog shit. It was like the last. You know when they sell like 2/3 of a stadium.
Yeah.
I was
you were
right
like
at that
9 o'clock,
the
right?
90 degree. It was garbage. And so this time I was like, fuck that. I'm an adult. I got 10th row.
Nice.
I pissed away so much money in these tickets. I'm so glad
Worth
I can
it.
Go.
Worth it.
So glad I can go. I'm sorry, Zach.
Is that seated or standing?
It's the it's the first row of seated.
Okay.
It's there's like these like folding chairs that'll probably just get thrown fucking everywhere for 10 rows right in front. And I have the first seated row.
That's awesome.
Yeah, row section 103, row A.
You have close access to the mosh pit.
I invited Zach, but he has to go a day earlier than me to shoot B-roll in Iceland. Oh. I'm going to Iceland. Originally, I was supposed to go to Iceland the 6th. The show is the 7th. And now I got bumped to the 8th. But he has to go on the 6th.
I'm both sad and not sad.
You could act. Why don't you move your flight to Phoenix, and then there's a chance it won't take off because it'll be too hot.
Then you just come back. You want to talk about too hot? We're going to fucking Death Valley tomorrow.
Yeah, it's gonna suck.
We're going to Death Valley tomorrow. We're in the middle of a heat wave. I looked up at the weather.
It's like 117.
Well, first off, if we were a couple days earlier, it's gonna be about 100. It's gonna be 120. It's gonna be 120. 2 days ago in Death Valley, it was 131.
Oh, my God.
The world record there in, like, the early 10s, by the way, 1910s, was 134. Probably been beaten. No joke.
At that point, you don't even need, like, a sous vide.
The hottest I've ever personally been in was 119 in Phoenix, and I was in a Shelby GT500, and the air conditioner stopped working because it was so hot.
Man.
Last year, when we shot the Toon shootout, it was, like, was it a buck 16?
It was a buck 16 in Palm Springs.
In the track?
It was gnarly.
So I do enjoy the fact that out here it's still kind of a dry heat, and I know everyone says that.
No,
that
matters.
But,
no, that
it does matter, but once you're at 115, it doesn't matter.
Just
that
roasting.
Because
I remember growing up in Atlanta, miserable. It'd be 100, and you'd be like, "Oh God,
no, I'd rather be in 108 dry though than humid."
For
anything,
sure,
frankly,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. Thailand was like 100, or was in the 90s and humid, and it was pretty fucking.
You know,
brutal.
Winter and the humidity works the same way too. Like Atlanta,
yeah,
I'd rather
super
be
cold.
Zero in Chicago than like 20 with humidity.
Well, if you ever go skiing in Vermont versus skiing in Colorado, you know, when it's like minus 10 in Vermont, it's real cold versus, you know, minus 10 in Chicago, in Colorado is like bearable.
Yeah.
The wetness just brings everything in.
Yeah. We got a few questions from Facebook.
Yeah, we do.
Before we wrap this show, what do you got? I bet we got a few.
We got a guy's planning a bachelor party and he wants to make it automotive themed. They're all out of LA and he wants to do some type of driving in the state, like a track event mixed with a road trip. From place to place on the interstate. So is there anything that Porsche Experience that they could look out for or something else you would advise?
Porsche Experience Center usually takes reservations and things like that. With a big group like that, it's probably a good idea to call a couple weeks ahead. It's actually a really, really fun place.
Yeah. So I see. I haven't been yet. I see it on the highway when I drive
if
by.
If you do a lot of track driving, the handling circuit there probably won't exactly be what tickles your fancy. It'll probably be more of the low friction modules. I mean,
that's
low friction
stuff.
Circle
yeah.
where you can slide the car. The kick plate's probably the most unique.
That thing's
thing.
Cool. Yeah. I love watching people.
It's like a hydraulically mounted piece of asphalt. Where the front wheel's clear. The car gets kicked through
the axle.
That's
fun.
In an oversteer situation.
Oh,
like
I dig that.
Black ice. Yeah.
It's like oversteer recovery.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
that's neat.
Yeah, so
yeah,
you can
yeah.
save it.
I mean, I can recommend
really
Exotics Racing, you know, in California and in Vegas, and as well as Dream Racing in Vegas. Exotics Racing has their own tracks. They're smaller tracks, and they have an interesting assortment of vehicles, and it's pretty affordable, and it's a good staff. And then Dream Racing is a little more expensive and a little more upscale, and they use Las Vegas Motor Speedway's actual circuit. But they have everything from... you know, normal, quote, normal supercars to proper race cars. Ferrari 458 Challenge and Gallardo Super Trofeo, Huracan Super Trofeo, if you wanted something that was a little more hardcore. Or there's the Vore Vegas Off-Road Experience, if you were, which is mini trophy trucks.
Yeah.
There's Wide Open Baja, which is a Baja racing school with buggies, if you wanted to go down to Mexico. They started at Ensenada. That's like a multi-day kind of thing. Or fucking go on Craigslist and buy a shitbox and pick your off-road destination.
Totally. Yeah.
Honestly, I would do that. A couple people have emailed me in the past and been like, hey, we bought shitboxes for a bachelor party weekend and went off-roading in the desert, and it was great fun. So,
and one thing, Musto did this with a bunch of friends. They just picked like four tracks and just designed their own road trip, and it was like six track friends. They went from here to there to there to there to there. They did like Buttonwheel,
their own mini one lap.
They did their own one lap thing. It's like you know, you could probably spend a day setting it up and booking hotels and figure out what track events you can go to on what day. And then if you have your own cars, you could do that too.
Yeah. If they want to come out to a speed or interest event,
there you go.
I know a guy
could follow you guys around.
Yeah.
Is a racing license worth getting now that the barrier to entry on endurance and time attack is so low? Is there a need to replace Skip Barber?
Those are two separate questions.
Yeah.
Indeed. Same person.
A racing license will help. Yeah. I mean, it will. If you get a racing license and you show up to any series and you present the license, the conversation is over. You don't have to be like, but I did this, but I did this, but I did this.
You have credibility, essentially, in that organization's eyes. So
they don't expire.
No. And depending on what route you go, you know, like NASA or and BMW CCA, they have their comp schools. So you're going, and instead of like learning by experience and being like, oh, I've done four Lemons events, you know, you actually sit through classroom sessions and you practice standing starts and do passing drills and things like that just to kind of bring you up to speed a little bit quicker.
Because you could do four Lemons races, but you could have a car break in the first hour of four Lemons races, yeah. And then your experience is much more limited.
Yeah. So,
I mean, if you can afford it and you can get to a place conveniently to get one, then I would say, yeah, it's worth it. If you don't have to go, if it won't completely, you know, I guess, interfere with your life to get one, and you want to do motorsport, like, it'll help.
I guess it depends on what they want it for, though. If they want it because they want to drive on a track and they're like, oh, I'm going to go to racing school, to me, that's the completely wrong way to do it. You know, if you have a comp license, but you've only done comp school or gone to, like, a Skip Barber program and you have a racing license, you're most likely not going to be very fast. You're going to enter a race.
Right.
You're going to get lapped by everybody. You're going to lose interest because you're not competitive. And you're going to get out. You know, you might do it for a year or two and then be done.
Alternatively, like, you can do one racing school and then do a couple Lemons races, and then that'll get you into a couple Chump races, and then that'll get you into a couple AER races. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do it that way, and you'd probably end up driving better in those AER races because you're more comfortable going wheel to wheel and whatever. But, you know, if your friends have an AER car and you want to get in that car, you know, and you don't care if you're not the fastest guy, but you show up with a comp license, you're approved. You're in.
I guess it all depends on what you want out of it. Like, for me, I'm the type of person, I'm really competitive, so if I'm going to be competing, I want to have the skill set to be able to win.
Right.
So I would point somebody like that into track days, hone your skills for not a whole lot of money, doing track days in your own vehicle, and then move up into wheel-to-wheel and maybe go to comp school or go to a racing school. But if you just want to get out and compete and you don't really care where you're going to be at, you know, then there's still certainly
you know,
places for it.
Good answers. What are the most common mistakes or underdeveloped skills you see or misconceptions about performance driving? And in turn, what key areas should enthusiasts focus on developing?
I see a lot of people not using the brakes to their full potential. It's probably one of the reasons why a lot of times if someone lets me drive their car, I don't burn the brakes to the ground, but Abram, our time attack guy, I drove his car, and he's never so much as boiled the fluid. And like four laps in, we get black flag because the rotors are glowing when I'm driving it. So that, a lot of people have the tendency to turn in early as well. And a lot of people...
Turning in early is a big one.
Yeah. You get kind of like antsy, you know, and you turn in early. And then a lot of people bring too much car for their skill level. You see that a lot. And then I guess the other thing too, I see a lot of people balking downshifts. You know, like one of the guys I rode with this weekend, he let the clutch out kind of a little too quickly, and it chirped the rear tires.
Yeah,
like right when he was turning in.
Ooh.
Where if it would have been a little worse, you know, the car could have started sliding. Like the downshifts, it's important how you blip the throttle, but it's almost more important how you release the clutch. You know, you don't want to ease off of it real slowly, but you also don't want to pop off of it. So,
one of the things I see is Like, I understand the need to modify your car, just, like, maybe you want to change the sound or maybe you want whatever, but, like, I see a lot of people who legitimately think they're improving their performance by adding an exhaust or an intake or something, when the truth is they are by far and I'm not necessarily an exception. Like, I got a modified car, and, like, if someone better than me got in my car, they could probably be faster than me. Like, so I'm not saying I'm exempt from this, but, like, in general... You know, you see a lot of people with modified cars. I mean, look at the fucking, you see the beginner group at GridLife. There's a whole, you know, there's beginners, there's a guy in a 1,000 horsepower GTR. And like, I'm not trying to shit on that guy specifically. Like, God bless him for knowing he's a beginner and taking an instructor and going on the track. Like, I'm not shitting on it. But like, at a certain point, you need to realize that most cars are faster than you can drive them, period. So I would say spend money on your own skills.
And another thing leading to that, a lot of people don't really think about it, and it's kind of gruesome, but your car can be gone in an instant. You know, you can pour tons of money into it, and it can be gone in an instant due to something happening.
Yeah.
But the skills that you invest in yourself are going to follow you around for, for a long time.
So. Yeah, yeah.
I think there's a lot of people that they build a car up, like they street drive most of the time. So maybe, like, for example, the 900 horsepower GTR guy, like maybe he was a street driver and he liked driving his car and he keeps adding power, and then he finally goes, you know what, maybe I should try the track, and that's good. But there are definitely people that think they need, quote, need certain mods before they can go to the track. Like, you need brake fluid and pads, but you don't, I gotta wait till I get these coilovers. I gotta wait till I'm competitive and I add this new turbos or something. It's like, no, you're doing it the wrong way.
Yeah.
My favorite
thing. I've driven some shit boxes on track before that fucking were, you know, were stock and terrible. I mean, I drove a fucking G-Wagon in a track, at an open track day. You know what I mean? There's almost no excuse for.
Yeah, some guy actually emailed us for the Laguna Seca event about driving an SQ5 on track. So
you could?
Yeah, sure.
You could?
There were some special stipulations to it.
Car's got no steering feel.
Yeah.
None. But you could.
Really, you could bring your mom's minivan, and as long as it's not leaking fluids and you think the brakes are going to hold
up. Rutledge ran a Sienna in one lap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'll learn from that experience.
Yeah.
Like, you'll learn.
Last year at Grid Life, my buddy Promo brought a Toyota Sienna rental, like, rental van.
Did he run it in Time Attack?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, and unlimited all-wheel drive. He took second. Took second, because there was only one unlimited all-wheel drive car. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So.
He got a trophy.
Yep.
What's the wildest experience you've had as an instructor?
As an instructor, the wildest experience that I've had was probably at at Atlanta Motorsports Park. Supercharged S2000. Stock brakes.
Oof.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Either that or one of the exotic driving experiences at Atlanta Motorsports Park again, coming up turn 12, I believe, onto the front straight, where you don't want to lift. We were doing probably like 110, and the guy lifted. And at that point, I was like, things could go really bad really quickly here. So, I mean, I've had some offs and stuff with students driving, but for the most part, they're not that bad, and they're usually not that high speed. But those were two instances where I kind of, like, questioned why I was riding in the passenger seat.
Couldn't get me, you know, there's, like, six drivers in the world I'll get in the fucking car with.
Yeah.
There's really not very many. I'm not a good passenger.
Which car surprised you the most for any reason?
Surprised me the most... To be honest, before I bought a Miata, I hate being that guy. I hate being that track guy. But before I bought a Miata, I didn't think Miatas were that great. And then I bought one, and it's so much greater on track than the sum of its parts. Mm-hmm. Like, you're like, it could not possibly be that good. But it really is.
I just drove did you edit it yet? I did a one take with a Highlander. You fucking drive that thing?
Oh, you were telling me about that.
No, I'm sorry. Not a Highlander. RAV4. Mm-mm. I did a fucking one take a month or so ago. With a RAV4 V6, which is like, it's got the big motor. It's like, I don't know, 285 horsepower or something. And the guy did coilovers, and then he did smaller wheels. He did like 18-inch wheels, but like track tires, not like balloony RAV4 tires. And he put like an exhaust on it and shit. Yo, and it whipped. It handled really good, and he said it ran like a low 13 quarter mile. Like, it was fast.
Shit, man.
Yeah. And I was like, I took the video as like a joke and like I'm like fucking numb to fucking anything. So I'd rather drive a RAV4 than a fucking Corvette, you know, but I expected it to be dog shit. And the guy had a really funny name too. I don't remember his name. You'll know in the video, but his name was like Blaze. His name was Blaze. I swear to God, his name was Blaze. I think I'm 90% sure his name was Blaze. And then I drove the car, and I was shocked at the fact that it like handled good and rode well, and like it turned in pretty hard, and it stuck, and it was really fast. And I was like I'm telling you, like, it was 90% as fast as like an STI would have been down this road. Or at least as good as a Forester XT.
Yeah, it was basically
like a Forester XT with no pretense about it at all. I mean, it was an automatic, but shocked.
You've had a couple weird cars where it's proof that you can drive anything quickly. You can learn from anything.
Yeah,
you want to modify? Like, yeah, you don't have a lot of money. So your parents gave you like a Gallant or something.
I've had a couple.
Whatever.
I don't remember offhand, but I've had a couple where it's like, holy shit, this thing is totally decent. you know, and you can go real fast in this.
Like a TDI Sport Wagon.
Yeah, I mean, TDI Sport Wagons. Yeah, you drive yours real fast. You got rid of that thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You had one. I did a one take with Austin's fucking TDI Sport Wagon, but there's been I'm blanking right now at some of the other ones that have been like just nothings, but they've actually driven really good.
You liked that Corolla, didn't you?
Oh, Corolla XRSs. Yeah. You know what's fucked up, dude? People shit on Toyotas for being boring all the time. I've driven a bunch of Toyotas recently that were great. I drove... fuck me if you can hear that. That's my... Can you... Austin, can you go hit that real quick? I drove the Corolla XRS. Amazing. I've done a couple MR2s recently that were amazing. Thank you. Thank you, buddy. I just recently did another Corolla that was it was supercharged, and it was gutted. It was like an 05 Corolla stock, but like... good shocks, good tires, gutted interior, and a supercharger, and it was a goddamn riot.
Who makes a supercharger for those?
TRD.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it was TRD. Wasn't it TRD? Did you edit that one yet?
I don't know.
It's in one of the next ones that you haven't edited yet, yeah. And, it was either Jackson Racing or it was TRD. It was one of those two. It was a Roots blower. And it was a fucking riot.
I remember, like, Sport Compact Car did, like, a Matrix XRS or a Vibe GT or
something. They rip, right?
Yeah.
That's a 2ZZ.
Yeah.
And I just...
all-wheel drive, dude.
I did that little red MR2 that people were so disappointed in. The viewers hated it because it had all... it was all body kit and no fucking motor, and the viewers hated it. And so what usually happens is when I do a car like that is someone will email me with the one I really wanted, and so I get to do that one later. So someone emailed me with a totally stock-looking MR2, the Spider, with a 2ZZ swap.
Hmm.
So we're going to do that one.
People case swap those too.
They case swap them, yeah. But the 2ZZ is the Elise motor. That's the one I really wanted.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know the problem with them? Those are like they're struts at all four corners.
Yes.
So if you want to add more camber, you have camber plates front and rear.
You know, I just it's so funny you mentioned that. I didn't. You know, I'm perfectly okay admitting that I don't know everything. I'm fine being a student and not a teacher. I thought that struts and shocks were the same thing, and they were terms that were used interchangeably, and that is not the case.
No,
I didn't know that. I just learned that. I'm okay learning something. There, what's the exact difference?
It's the McPherson strut design,
right?
Is like the strut style suspension, and then the shock is just a shock absorber,
right? But like, what the fuck? So what's a strut?
So the strut is the actual like the McPherson strut design. It's still a shock, I guess. You could say every strut is a shock,
right?
But every shock is not a strut.
Okay,
does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I mean, yeah, no, it does. It makes sense, but it only answers half the question.
Yeah.
What the fuck? What is a McPherson strut?
So the McPherson strut assembly is essentially where it's not a coil over, but there is a coil on a shock.
Okay.
Whereas
someone said that it's part of the steering system, whereas a shock is not. Someone told me that.
Yeah, the McPherson strut would rotate.
Zach, are you looking? Is that what you're doing right now? I'm
trying, but there's so many results on Google.
Well, I bet you after this podcast goes up, I'm going to get 1,000 emails that I don't want. Let me just say this right now. By the time this podcast goes up, I will have figured out the answer to this. So if you are out there screaming at your fucking radio right now because you know the answer to this and I don't tell me because I already figured it out. Okay? Don't be that guy. Because every time something happens, someone...
All right. I'm gonna start
several dozen people email me.
Here you go.
You got it?
So shocks and struts are two different suspension parts that perform similar functions. In struts, the spring is held by the strut, and the strut provides structural support for the vehicle.
Okay.
Shocks do not provide structural support for the vehicle, because obviously you can take a shock out
It sits on the spring.
Yeah. So a shock is like part of that McPherson mounting system with like a top hat and all this other stuff, and it provides structural support for the vehicle. The shock is just something that goes in either a strut type suspension or something other type of suspension.
The strut is load-bearing.
Yeah. The strut is load-bearing, and the shock is not.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, fine. See, now you people don't have to email me because we've solved it right here.
Oh, they're gonna. Oh, they're not done.
All right. Anything else on Facebook before we get out of here?
Two super fast grid life questions. Any grid life going to the Northeast, and any grid life going to mid-Ohio?
So Grid Life was at Mid Ohio in March, April, March.
But that was just a time attack, right?
Yeah. Oh, like a big festival.
Yeah, the festival thing.
The festival is different than some of the other events that we have.
Yeah, there's time attack festival. There's time attack events, which are normal. Some people didn't realize that and showed up to one of them at, thinking it was a festival, and it was just
Time that was actually Robert Thorne in the 2000.
Super disappointed.
Our last year event of the year. Wah, he drove from Colorado to Michigan. For the event.
Like, but there's no girls here.
Yeah.
No, so the thing about they Gingerman was crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts this year.
I think, and I talked to Stuart. I only got about 5 minutes with Chris Stewart, who's the head organizer. And he was like, yeah, dude, we're going to have to figure out if we've outgrown this racetrack, which it's possible they have.
It was nearing the threshold. We could fit more people in. Like, you could have camping on Spectator Hill if you had to.
Oh my God, you could.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't want to.
Maybe in a certain portion, like that back section.
Yeah. I mean, they had 8,000 people. That's a lot.
Yeah, about 8,000
people
per day were there.
And Road Atlanta's going to be what, 12 or 15? Do you think?
I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I don't know exactly what it'll
be. Okay, so we should plug that, dude. Grid Life Road Atlanta is August 24, 5, and 6?
Yeah, 24, 5, 6.
It's the last weekend in August. I am going. Yeah. Ludacris is playing.
Ludacris.
So that's
there.
For me.
Super stoked.
For me, that's the thing because
26th,
I fucking love Ludacris. I love Ludacris. Ludacris loves cars. This is going to be a great thing for Ludacris. Great thing for us. And like the EDM shit, like that's cool. Like I get it. The bands that performed or the artists that performed at Gingerman, like that was good music. Like I enjoyed hanging out there. But Ludacris is, that's different. I'm fucking ready for Ludacris
in
Atlanta.
We had Andrew WK last year.
Oh yeah, you did. Yeah, I forgot about
you,
that.
You had to miss that one.
I got there late and I missed him. Yeah. But damn. I'm excited. So Road Atlanta, Grid Life. So they got, is the racing sold out already for Grid Life Atlanta?
No, I think we still have some more driver spots.
There's driver spots, so you can
not
do
all of them.
HPDE, Drifting, Time Attack.
Drifting is by invite only, or you have to send an email and get Chris to approve.
So you can apply to Drifting.
Yeah.
So HPDE, Time Attack are open, and then Spectator, Festival Goer, Music, Camping tickets are for sale at grid.life.
Not grid.life.com,
no.
grid.life.
www.grid.life is the website. Thanks for coming, Austin. I appreciate it. That's good.
Always good to hang with you guys.
Yeah, dude. This was a good show. I liked it. Zach and I are about to go to fucking Death Valley tomorrow morning.
Yep.
I think we have no choice but to record our next podcast from Death Valley, right? So we're going to record the next show from Death Valley. Fuck, you got the ambulance thing, you got the motorcycle, you got a lot going on.
Maybe living on a boat soon.
The boathouse trading. I like the boathouse trading thing. This is a good plan. I'm looking for new creative ways to burn money.
You'd have somebody to watch the cats while you're gone.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm taking because Zach can't come to Rise Against, I'm taking my cat sitter. My friend Travis is my cat sitter, and I'm taking him to Rise Against as a thank you for watching my... He watched the cats while I was in... Virginia, and also while we're in fucking Italy. So, yeah, boy. Oh, boy. It's going to be fun. The Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. You just need a better internet connection than we have, and better microphones than we have, and more interesting things to say than we do. That's all. Thanks for listening. Thanks for coming, Austin. Appreciate it. And we will talk to you guys next week.